Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The 7,226th meeting of the Security Council is called to order. The provisional agenda for this meeting is Threats to International Peace and Security Caused by Terrorists Act. The agenda is adopted. The Security Council will now begin its consideration of item 2 of the agenda. Ladies and gentlemen, after consultations among council members, I have been authorized to make the following statement on their behalf. I quote, the Security Council recalls its resolution 1267 of 1999, 1373 of 2001, 1989 of 2011, 2129 of 2012, 2013, 2133 of 2014, and 2161 of 2014, and stresses the obligation of the member states to prevent and suppress the financing of terrorist acts and expresses grave concern over the reports of the access to and seizure of oil fields and pipelines in Syria and Iraq by terrorist groups listed by the Security Council 1267/1989 Committee, namely Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant and Jabhat al-Nusra, and as cause in this regard, that any trade of oil with these entities will be inconsistent with the Council's resolutions, and that all states are required to ensure that their nationals and any persons within their territory do not trade in oil with these entities. The Security Council reaffirms its strong commitment to the sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity of Syria and Iraq, and in this regard, strongly condemns any engagement in direct or indirect trade of oil from Syria and Iraq involving terrorist groups. The Security Council also emphasizes that such engagement constitutes financial support for terrorists and may lead to further sanctions, listings, if those groups are listed by the Security Council 1267/1989 Sanctions Committee as associated with al-Qaeda. The Security Council notes with concern that any oil fields and related infrastructure controlled by terrorist organizations could generate material income for terrorists, which would support their recruitment efforts, including of foreign terrorist fighters, and strengthen their operational capability to organize and carry out terrorist attacks. The Security Council reminds all states that they are required to ensure that their nationals and any persons within their territory not engage in any commercial or financial transactions with or for the benefit, directly or indirectly, of the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant and Jabhat al-Nusra, notably with respect to oil in Syria and Iraq. The Security Council also emphasizes the importance of all member states upholding their obligation to ensure that their nationals and persons within their territory do not make donations to individuals and entities designated by the Security Council 1267/1989 Committee. The Security Council calls upon all member states, should any information on such activities be available to them, to bring it to the notice of the 1267/1989 Sanctions Committee and cooperate closely with the Security Council in this regard. Unquote. So this statement will be issued as a document of the Security Council under symbol S/PRST/2014/14. The Security Council has thus concluded the present stage of its consideration of the item on its agenda. The meeting is adjourned. The 7,227th meeting of the Security Council is called to order. The provisional agenda for this meeting is the situation in Mali. The agenda is adopted. The Security Council will now begin its consideration of item 2 of the agenda. After consultations among council members, I have been authorized to make the following statement on their behalf. Quote, the Security Council welcomes the commencement of the inter-Malian negotiation process in Algiers on 16th July 2014 in line with its resolution 2100-2013 and 2164 of 2014. The statement by its president, S/2014/2, its previous statements, as well as the 18th June 2013 Ouagadougou preliminary agreement, and which aims to achieve a comprehensive peace agreement ending the crisis. The Security Council commends the facilitation role played by Algeria at the request of the Malian authorities in the launching of these formal peace talks and in convening the government of Mali and the signatory and adherent armed groups of the Ouagadougou Agreement. The Security Council also commends the close coordination between Algeria, the Special Representative of the Secretary General and Head of the United Nations Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in Mali, the African Union, the Economic Community of West African States, Mediation Team, the European Union, and other regional and international partners, and encourages them to continue these important efforts. The Security Council commends the parties for the constructive dialogue and discussions held in Algiers between 16th July and 24th July 2014, leading to the consensual adoption of the roadmap, so-called feuille de route des négociations dans le cadre du processus d'Alger, by the parties. The Security Council calls on the parties to fully comply with the commitments outlined in the roadmap, including by engaging in the comprehensive peace talks in Algiers, scheduled to begin on 17th August 2014. The Security Council underscores the importance of an inclusive and credible negotiation process open to all communities of the north of Mali with the goal of securing a durable political resolution to the crisis and long-term peace and stability throughout the country, respecting the sovereignty, unity, and territorial integrity of the Malian state. The Security Council reiterates its concern about the fragile security situation in the north of Mali and calls on all parties to immediately and fully respect the ceasefire agreement signed on 23rd May 2014, as well as the declaration of the cessation of hostilities signed in Algiers on 24th July 2014. The Security Council reiterates its demand on all armed groups in Mali to cease hostility immediately, as well as reject the recourse to violence. The Security Council calls on all the parties to implement all agreed confidence building measures and reiterates its call to accelerate the containment of the armed groups as a practical step leading to an effective disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration process in the context of a comprehensive peace settlement. The Security Council welcomes the establishment of the Joint Commission under the auspices of MINUSMA to facilitate the implementation of the ceasefire agreement and the declaration of the cessation of hostilities. The Security Council encourages the Security General to further enable MINUSMA to reach its full operational capacity as soon as possible, especially in the context of the new force laid down in the north of Mali. The Security Council reiterates its full support for the key role and active engagement of the Special Representative of the Secretary General for Mali, including his good offices and close coordination with the international community towards the restoration of peace and security throughout the national territory of Mali, unquote. So this statement will be issued also as a document of the Security Council under the symbol S/PRST/2014/15. The Security Council has thus concluded the present stage of its consideration of item on its agenda, the meeting is adjourned. So the 7,228th meeting of the Security Council is called to order. The provisional agenda for this meeting is United Nations peacekeeping operations, the United Nations and regional partnership as its evolution. The agenda is adopted. In accordance with Rule 37 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite the representative of Armenia, Brazil, Egypt, Estonia, Fiji, Georgia, Germany, Guatemala, India, Indonesia, Ireland, Italy, Japan, Malawi, Malaysia, New Zealand, Pakistan, Philippines, Romania, Spain, Sweden, Thailand, Turkey, and Zimbabwe to participate in this meeting. It is so decided. In accordance with Rule 39 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite the following individuals to participate in this meeting. His Excellency Mr. Maciej Popowski, Deputy Secretary General of the European External Action Service. His Excellency Mr. Tete Antonio, Permanent Observer of the African Union to the United Nations. Ms. Irini Lemos Maniati, NATO Senior Civilian Liaison Officer of the United Nations. It is so decided. The Security Council will now begin its consideration of item 2 of the agenda. I wish to draw your attention of Council members to document S/2014/478, elated dated 3rd July 2014, from the Permanent Representative of Rwanda to the United Nations, addressed to the Secretary General, transmitting a concept paper on the item under consideration. I wish to warmly welcome the distinguished Secretary General, His Excellency Mr. Ban Ki-moon, and I now give him the floor. Sir, you have the floor.
Mr. President, distinguished members of the Council, distinguished representatives of African Union and European Union, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I thank the Government of Rwanda for convening this discussion on regional partnerships in United Nations peacekeeping, especially in Africa. This is the second debate on this subject this year. Such active engagement and such a high-level representation by the African Union and European Union is a testament to the importance of our combined efforts to keep and build peace. We have seen how the effectiveness of the AU and the UN can be enhanced when we coordinate and complement our efforts. This partnership has also benefited from the European Union's growing involvement in crisis management and post-conflict stabilization. From Operation Artemis in the east of the Democratic Republic of the Congo in 2003 to this year's deployment of EUFOR in the Central African Republic, the UN and the EU have increased their strategic partnership. By engaging early during the planning phase, we have achieved an effective division of labor, for example, in the areas of police and security sector reform. Mali offers another important example of effective cooperation. Our partnership with the AU and the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, allowed for the rapid deployment of military and police elements under AFISMA, which were subsequently re-hatted under MINUSMA. This cooperation led to the signing of the Ouagadougou Preliminary Agreement in June 2013 under the mediation of Burkina Faso on behalf of ECOWAS. Separately, the European Union has launched a training mission to build the capacity of Malian armed forces. We'll continue to work closely with the European Union, which is launching a new mission in Mali to build the capacity of law enforcement institutions, as well as with the AU mission for Mali and the Sahel on the regional dimension of the conflict. We are also working with the AU and ECOWAS alongside Algeria and other regional actors in support of the ongoing political process. I congratulate the Malian parties on the adoption of a consensual roadmap for the inter-Malian negotiations last week. I remain, however, deeply concerned about instability in the north. I call on parties, all parties, to cease hostilities and cooperate with the MINUSMA-led Joint Security Commission. Excellencies, in the Central African Republic, the UN has been collaborating with the Economic Community of Central African State, ECAS, the AU, EU, and other key partners. MINUSCA and MISCA are working hand in hand to prepare for a transfer of authority on 15 September. And an international mediation team has recently been formed to support the political process, including ECAS, the UN, and the AU. I welcome the agreement reached on 23 July under the leadership of President Nguesso of Republic of Congo, with the support of AU, ECAS, and my special representatives to CAR and Central Africa. This is an essential first step in ensuring durable peace, respect for human rights, protection of civilians, and the rule of law. In South Sudan, our peacekeeping mission, UNMISS, has been working closely with the Intergovernmental Authority for Democratic Development, IGAD, since the outbreak of the crisis last December. However, despite our efforts, you heard on Wednesday that the situation is the most rapidly deteriorating humanitarian crisis in the world today, worse even than Central African Republic and Syria. I repeat my call to the leaders of both sides to abide by the cessation of hostilities agreement signed on January 23. In Darfur, despite political and logistical challenges, the UN and the AU will continue to intensify their efforts to support UNAMID to discharge its mandated tasks. In addition, the UN, the AU, and the government of Ethiopia are jointly engaging Sudan and South Sudan to encourage both governments to consolidate peace in the disputed territory of Abyei with the support of UNISFA on the ground. Our partnership with the AU and IGAD also extends to Somalia, where my special representative is working with the envoys of the AU and IGAD to advance the political process. Mr. President, Excellencies, partnerships with the regional organizations should continue to be based on the comparative strength of each organization. It is also important that we draw detailed lessons from our recent transition experiences in the context of Mali and very soon the Central African Republic. We'll continue to work to enhance the productivity and sustainability of African-led peace support operations. In Côte d'Ivoire, we will proceed with the establishment of a quick reaction force to support UNOCHI and our mission in Liberia, UNMIL. The effort would not compete with existing mechanisms or our support for regional initiatives such as the African Peace and Security Architecture, including the African Standby Force and its ECOWAS Brigade. It is consistent with our efforts to transition out of countries where peacekeeping operations have contributed to restoring peace, security, and stability. By mid-2015, the peacekeeping footprint in West Africa will be lighter as UNOCHI and UNMIL downsize. In this process, it is important that regional organizations play a greater role. But we are conscious that the root causes of conflict are not yet fully addressed, and emerging transnational threats pose new challenges to stability. It is therefore critical to ensure that all precautions are taken. We strongly support cooperation within the framework of the AU, ECOWAS, and the Mano River Union to reinforce the individual and collective security of the countries of the sub-region. Bearing in mind the evolution of transnational threats, we will need to continue our dialogue on how best to support host governments. This could include embedding specialized units in our operations to provide policing and law enforcement expertise and capacity development assistance for host government agencies. Mr. President, Excellencies, we have been talking for some time about the need for UN and key regional actors to be able to deploy more rapidly, especially in acute emergencies. The EU battle group was created for this purpose, as was the African Standby Force. But despite years of investment, we are still far from having predictable and effective mechanisms for rapid development. In CAR, the fourth generation process for U4 was slower than expected, and the EU battle group was not used. And we are in a race against the time for the re-hatting of MISCA on 15 September, trying to secure the necessary enablers and other contributions to MINUSCA. We, the UN, the AU, and the EU, together with other key partners, need to do better. I'm convinced that we can, if we use existing mechanisms and capacity much more effectively and predictably, and further strengthens others. The UN stands ready to further support the efforts of the AU and the regional economic communities to fully operationalize the African Standby Force. We should also stop looking at different tools in isolation and only through the lens of the relevant organizations. Instead, we should see how we can bring them together in a way that will finally allow the international community to respond much more quickly. I recently announced in this chamber my intention to undertake a review of peacekeeping as we approach the 15-year anniversary of the Brahimi Report. Over the past decade and a half, this Council has repeatedly shown its confidence in the value of the United Nations peacekeeping by deploying missions with complex mandates to tough environments. We are constantly working to keep peace with the rising demands and emerging challenges. We are already innovating and applying creative solutions in coordination with our valued partners. The review will help us further improve our mobility and agility so that we can better fulfill our duty to protect civilians in need. This review will also examine the tremendous growth in partnership with regional organizations. Deepening and strengthening these partnerships will be critical to our collective efforts to meet the challenges of the future. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank His Excellency the Secretary General for his statement. I now give the floor to His Excellency Mr. Maciej Popowski. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. President, Secretary General, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, let me first congratulate Rwanda for the initiative for bringing us together today. It's a very timely initiative, timely not only because of the challenges we collectively still face, but also because it's time to measure progress made 20 years after the genocide and our collective failure at that time. The African continent has shown tremendous resolve in solving conflicts on its soil. The best illustration is the leadership role played by the African Union in conjunction with other regional organizations such as ECOWAS, IGAD, and SADC. Thanks to their efforts, most lasting conflicts have come to an end. But the continent still hosts half of the current UN PKO, and their annual budget represents more than 70% of the global peacekeeping budget of the organization. We appreciate the increased United Nations cooperation with regional organizations in peace and security activities under Chapter 8 and the acknowledgement of the role of regional organizations in peacekeeping. Peacekeepers transform mandates into concrete actions on the ground and keep hope for peace alive. Clearly defined mandates, adequate resources, and reliable command and control structures are crucial for successful peacekeeping. They're also crucial for a successful transition from peacekeeping to peacebuilding. We strongly believe in the central importance of the protection of all civilians, particularly women and children in armed conflict, and the central importance of protection of civilian mandates where they exist. This is often decisive for the success and legitimacy of United Nations peacekeeping operation. While protection often implies taking a more robust approach, as we know, this, of course, needs to be taken into account and needs to take into account resources, mandates, and host state responsibilities. Against that context, we welcome agreement on rates of reimbursement of the troop contributing countries, though, of course, it means that the global budget to support peacekeeping operations surpasses $8 billion US dollars. Well, the EU cooperation with the UN on peacekeeping has developed steadily since the Brahimi report mentioned by the Secretary General, with the aim to improve the efficiency of peacekeeping operations around the world. The engagement of the European Union in peacekeeping efforts is demonstrated by the mere development of our common security and defense policy, of which Africa remains a center of gravity with 10 missions and operations deployed on the continent. The EU cooperates very closely with the UN at strategic level, including through joint consultative mechanisms. Our aim is to enhance practical support to UN peacekeeping, building on the 2003 joint declaration, EU-UN joint declaration on crisis management. We continue to develop this cooperation, notably by effective coordination during the assessment and planning phases and during the conduct of respective missions and operations, in line with the agreed EU plan of action to support UN peacekeeping. We're still exploring various other avenues for cooperation, such as ways to make available to the UN Department for Peacekeeping Operations some military capabilities of EU member states. The last meeting of our EU-UN Steering Committee on Crisis Management looked into progress made in the implementation of the EU Action Plan, as well as cooperation in theatres of operations such as Central African Republic and Afghanistan, but also trilateral cooperation with the African Union, as well as a systemic issue of the so-called decability of peacekeeping, i.e. The extent to which peacekeeping can be regarded as development assistance. We also cooperate very closely with our African partners. We welcome the intense participation by African countries in peace support operations on the continent, be it UN missions, hybrid, or African missions such as AMISOM or MISCA. When African and European leaders met at their summit in Brussels on the 2nd and the 3rd of April, they reaffirmed their joint commitment to peace and security on both our continents in conformity with the aims and principles of the UN Charter. The EU has been and will remain an active partner for Africa in order to bring peace and stability. We continuously pay attention to the security and development nexus, including in the context of the ongoing discussion on the post-2015 Sustainable Development Goals. This is the strength of the EU, but today we focus on our role in support of the peacekeeping operations. Well, before looking at the different ways in which EU has been active operationally, it's important to stress the significance of politics and political dialogue. Without political leadership and ownership from the continent, at continental, regional, at national level, it's hard to imagine any progress. Hence the importance of the strengthened political partnership between the European Union and the African Union and with regional organizations that I mentioned before. Joint and coordinated action is essential to find political solutions and, more importantly, prevent conflict. The more united Africa is in its peace efforts, the stronger its partnership with the international community. Now, looking now at the peacekeeping operations and the EU role, apart from the participation of its individual member states in the UN missions, EU's engagement includes building African capacity to restore and maintain peace, supporting the AU and regional organizations to deploy peacekeeping operations, and deploying autonomous EU missions and operations. Well, on the first, in order to improve the African capacity to predict and prevent or respond to crisis, EU has been strong supporter of the African peace and security architecture through the capacity building component of the Africa Peace Facility worth 100 million euro over the last 10 years. That included support for early warning systems, the multidimensional African standby force. We also recognize the African capacity for immediate responses to crisis, ASIRC, as a complementary tool for further enhancing the capacity of the African Union to respond to crisis. We increasingly focus on national capacity as the starting point. National security forces capable of maintaining stability after complex peace processes, tackling increasingly complex transnational threats, participating in peacekeeping operations. This has led to a number of security sector reform projects and training missions, EU training missions, both military and civilian, in DRC, in Somalia, Mali, Niger, the Horn of Africa. By 2016, the EU will have trained more than 10,000 African soldiers. In general, the European Union is supporting more than 50 capacity-building projects in more than 20 countries using all available instruments, not only crisis management instruments, but also development cooperation. On support to the African Union, AMIS, the EU mission in Darfur, was the first mission to receive in 2004, financial support by the European Union, followed by OMISOM in Somalia, AFISMA in Mali, and MISCA in CAR. For that purpose, we've been using the African Peace Facility mentioned before, which has played a crucial role in supporting EU operations. Given its success, the Africa Peace Facility has been extended and endowed with 750 million euros for the next 4 years. And finally, in order to respond to urgent crisis situations, the EU has deployed autonomous executive and non-executive missions. Military missions, Artemis, EUFOR Congo, EUFOR Chad, EUFOR CAR, and for the first time, a maritime security mission, UNAFOR Atalanta at the Horn of Africa. Military missions are generally bridging missions to preserve a critical environment with clear exit strategy towards taking over by United Nations. So Secretary General mentioned the transition in the Central African Republic, which indeed is well advanced, which I had a chance to witness during my visit to Bangui on the 18th of July. Finally, I think we should also look beyond peacekeeping. Peacekeeping operations can achieve a great deal, but they can never substitute for a viable political process. When there is no clear path toward peace, crisis will inevitably recur. Cooperation should go beyond firefighting. We need to stress prevention and mediation. Peacekeeping remains the flagship activity of the United Nations and a crucial tool paving the way for longer-term stability and development of countries emerging from a crisis. The important work of all actors in partnership with the United Nations is a tremendous effort that may not always be given due recognition. We need to focus on policy frameworks, continental and regional structures, tools and mechanisms to anticipate, prevent, manage and resolve crises, which is in line with EU's own comprehensive approach to crisis situations. Peacekeeping operations must be focused on enabling an emergence from crisis and re-establishing both the local authorities and the United Nations country teams at the heart of peace-building efforts. Continuous work on the peacekeeping and peace-building nexus remains important. Peacekeepers should provide support to the host state authorities while preserving the aim of achieving a transition that can consolidate its emergence from crisis. If a state is fragile or failing, peacekeepers can help to restore the state's authority and assist it, particularly with disarmament, demobilization and reintegration, security sector reform and justice. Transitions being from the African Union to the UN, as in the case of Mali or the Central African Republic, as well as from peacekeeping to other UN engagements, such as UN country teams, or to peace-building structures, continue to be pertinent subjects that merit further joint reflection. It remains very important to get these transitions right, and we need to draw lessons learned from past experience. The European Union closely follows the development and effectiveness of the UN peace-building structures, peace-building commission and peace-building fund. We stand ready to contribute to its improvement during the next review. And rest assured that the European Union will continue to look for ways to enhance our support to the UN peacekeeping. Thank you very much for your attention.
I thank Mr. Popovsky for his statement. I give now the floor to His Excellency, Mr. Tete Antonio. You have the floor, sir.
General des Nations Unies, Monsieur Ban Ki-moon, Excellence Monsieur Maciej Popovsky, Secrétaire général adjoint de l'Union africaine pour l'action extérieure, distingués membres du Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies, Mesdames et Messieurs, je voudrais tout d'abord, au nom de la présidente de la Commission de l'Union africaine, Dr Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, que des contraintes indépendantes de sa volonté ont empêché d'être parmi nous, remercier la présidence rwandaise du Conseil de sécurité pour avoir pris l'initiative de ce débat important sur le partenariat entre les Nations Unies et les organisations régionales dans le domaine de maintien de la paix. Ce faisant, le gouvernement du Rwanda démontre une fois de plus son attachement indéfectible au renforcement du partenariat entre l'Union africaine et les Nations Unies, ainsi qu'à la promotion aux côtés de deux autres membres africains du Conseil de sécurité, à savoir le Nigeria et le Tchad, des objectifs et positions du continent. Nous apprécions hautement la contribution inestimable du Rwanda aux opérations de soutien, de maintien à la paix conduites en Afrique. Assurément, le débat d'aujourd'hui qui vient à point nommé, intervenant dans un contexte marqué par un engagement de plus en plus soutenu sur le terrain de l'Union africaine et de ses mécanismes régionaux pour la prévention, la gestion et le règlement des conflits. Il nous offre l'occasion de faire le point de nos efforts conjoints et de convenir de mesures pratiques pour renforcer notre capacité collective à relever les défis auxquels nous sommes confrontés dans les domaines de la paix et de la sécurité. En engageant ce débat, nous nous devons de prendre appui sur les délibérations précédentes du Conseil de sécurité sur le partenariat entre les Nations Unies et les organisations régionales, y compris le financement des opérations conduites par l'Union africaine, délibérations initiées notamment par l'Afrique du Sud, lorsque ce pays a siégé au sein de cet auguste organe. C'est ici pour moi l'occasion de saluer la continuité de l'action africaine au niveau du Conseil de sécurité, celle-ci étant indéniablement un gage d'efficacité ainsi que du renforcement de la coordination entre les trois membres africains de cette instance dans le cadre de ce que nous appelons le A3. Monsieur le Président, nous nous devons également de prendre appui sur la riche expérience acquise ces dernières années. De la région soudanaise du Darfour au Mali, en passant par la République démocratique du Congo, la Somalie et la République centrafricaine, nombreux sont maintenant les exemples qui illustrent les avantages et les potentialités d'une approche flexible des défis à la paix et à la sécurité sur les continents et la nécessité de maximiser la complémentarité entre les Nations Unies et les arrangements régionaux, en particulier l'Union africaine. Qu'il me soit aussi permis d'exprimer notre appréciation au Conseil de sécurité pour l'attention soutenue qu'il continue d'accorder à la promotion de la paix et de la sécurité sur le continent et l'appui apporté aux efforts africains. La prorogation du module de soutien logistique à la mission de l'Union africaine en Somalie, le déploiement de plusieurs opérations de maintien de la paix sur le continent et bien d'autres initiatives en sont une illustration éloquente. Je voudrais enfin réitérer la gratitude de l'Union africaine au secrétaire général des Nations Unies pour son engagement inlassable en faveur de la paix et de la sécurité et de la stabilité sur le continent. Je relève avec satisfaction le renforcement continu du partenariat entre le secrétariat des Nations Unies et la Commission de l'Union africaine dans le cadre des dispositions pertinentes de la Charte, en particulier en son chapitre 8, et des orientations données par les organes décisionnels que sont le Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies et le Conseil de paix et de sécurité de l'Union africaine. Monsieur le Président, Mesdames et Messieurs, au cours de ces dernières années, l'Union africaine et ses mécanismes régionaux ont fait la preuve de leur détermination à jouer pleinement le rôle qui leur revient dans la promotion de la paix, la sécurité et de la stabilité sur le continent. Rien n'illustre mieux cet engagement que le déploiement de plusieurs opérations de soutien à la paix dans de différentes régions de l'Afrique. Ce faisant, il s'agit pour l'Afrique non seulement de donner effet aux dispositions pertinentes du protocole créant le Conseil de paix et de sécurité de l'Union africaine, mais également de contribuer dans une démarche de complémentarité avec les Nations unies et la sécurité collective telle qu'est prévue par la Charte des Nations unies. En effet, la plupart des opérations de soutien à la paix conduites par l'Afrique ont visé à créer des conditions de la mise en place subséquente par les Nations unies des missions multidimensionnelles de maintien de la paix pour soutenir la stabilisation à long terme des pays concernés et leur relèvement socio-économique. Elles interviennent dans des environnements instables où la paix n'est véritablement pas établie. Leur succès requiert la prise des risques importants et le recours, en tant que de besoin, à des mesures coercive pour favoriser précisément l'avènement des conditions propices au déploiement d'une mission onusienne de maintien de la paix. C'est dans cet esprit que l'Union africaine a déployé la mission au Darfour avant que celle-ci ne soit transformée en une opération hybride, à savoir la MINUAD. Reposant sur une combinaison judicieuse et novatrice des avantages comparatifs respectifs de l'Union africaine et des Nations unies, cette opération a par sa nature témoigné d'une capacité indéniable d'adaptation à la situation. Je voudrais ici rendre hommage à la MINUAD et à sa direction pour le travail remarquable accompli sur le terrain dans les conditions rendues d'autant plus difficiles qu'un nombre de groupes armés, malgré les efforts soutenus, déployés à cet effet par le médiateur en chef conjoint et d'autres acteurs internationaux, ne sont pas encore joints au processus de paix. C'est également dans cet esprit que l'Union africaine et les mécanismes régionaux concernés, à savoir la CEDEAO, la CEAC, ont déployé des opérations au Mali avec la MISMA et la République centrafricaine avec la MISCA. Les Nations unies ont déjà pris la relève dès la première à travers la MINUSMA et s'apprêtent à intégrer la MISCA au sein de la MINUSCA. Il est évident que l'effort de stabilisation initial entrepris par la MISMA et la MISCA et les sacrifices consentis par le personnel de ces missions ont grandement facilité la tâche des Nations unies. Je rends ici hommage aux pays contributeurs de troupes et de personnel de police pour leur engagement et détermination. C'est enfin dans cet esprit qu'opère la mission de l'Union africaine en Somalie. D'évidence, en cette année de déploiement, la MISOM et les forces de sécurité somaliennes ont enregistré des avancées remarquables dans la lutte contre le groupe terroriste El-Shabaab et l'extension de l'autorité de l'État. Ces résultats, nous les devons notamment au courage du personnel de la mission et aux énormes sacrifices consentis par la région à travers l'IGAD et le pays contributeur de troupes et de personnel de police. Je leur renouvelle les gratitudes de l'Union africaine. Dans le même temps, force est de reconnaître que beaucoup reste encore à faire, créer les conditions idoines d'un engagement international encore plus soutenu, notamment à travers une opération classique de maintien de la paix des Nations unies. Tous ces exemples témoignent de l'étroite complémentarité qui existe entre l'action africaine et celle des Nations unies, lesquelles participent tous les deux de la promotion de la sécurité collective telle que la conçoit la charte. Il montre à suffisance que face à la nature de plus en plus complexe des défis à la paix et à la sécurité auxquels le continent est confronté, le succès réside dans la cohérence de nos objectifs, l'utilisation judicieuse et flexible des ressources disponibles, la conjugaison de nos efforts et la coordination de nos actions sur le terrain. C'est fort de cette conviction que l'Union africaine se fait, depuis plusieurs années, l'avocat d'un partenariat dynamique entre les Nations unies et les organisations régionales, fondé sur une interprétation flexible et novatrice des dispositions de la charte 8, du chapitre 8 plutôt, de la charte des Nations unies. Le Conseil de paix et de sécurité de l'Union africaine, lors de sa réunion à New York en septembre dernier, a réitéré l'importance d'une telle approche et rappelé les principes qui doivent la sous-tendre. À dire vrai, les avancées significatives ont été enregistrées. Comme je le soulignais tantôt, la coordination entre les Nations unies et la Commission, entre le secrétariat des Nations unies plutôt et la Commission de l'Union africaine, ne cesse de se renforcer. S'agissant plus spécifiquement des opérations de soutien à la paix, nous nous réjouissons de l'appui crucial qu'apporte le secrétariat des Nations unies dans le domaine de la planification, ainsi que de la conduite et du soutien aux missions, comme l'illustrent notamment les exemples de la MISMA et de la MISCA. Le Conseil de sécurité et le Conseil de paix et de sécurité s'emploient aussi à renforcer leur partenariat et à favoriser une plus grande synergie entre les Nations unies et l'Union africaine. De ce point de vue, la décision du Conseil de sécurité d'autoriser la mise en place d'un module de soutien logistique en faveur de la MISOM est on ne peut plus éloquente. Il est clair que les résultats obtenus doivent beaucoup à ce soutien et celui qu'apportent d'autres partenaires, tant bilatéraux que multilatéraux, en particulier l'Union africaine, l'Union européenne et les États-Unis d'Amérique. Plus récemment, la mise en place, avec le mandat renforcé d'une brigade d'intervention au sein de la MONUSCO et d'une force de protection au sein de la MINUS, dont les effectifs sont pourvus par des pays africains, a fourni une illustration supplémentaire des avantages découlant d'un partenariat novateur entre les acteurs africains et les Nations unies. Tout en se félicitant de ces avancées, l'Union africaine est convaincue de la nécessité d'aller plus loin et d'innover encore davantage, tant il est vrai que notre capacité d'action et notre efficacité en seraient considérablement renforcées. Je voudrais à cet égard mettre un accent particulier sur la question du financement des opérations africaines de soutien à la paix. L'expérience de ces dernières années a amplement démontré que l'une des plus grandes contraintes à laquelle sont confrontées l'Union africaine et ses mécanismes régionaux porte sur la question du financement flexible, durable et prévisible de leurs opérations. Il est crucial qu'une solution durable soit trouvée à cette question. Les recommandations du rapport Prodi et ayant trait à une analyse approfondie de l'évolution du maintien de la paix et des défis y relatifs restent plus que jamais d'actualité. Le cas de la Somalie à travers la MISOM a démontré d'une combinaison judicieuse entre le financement par les contributions mises à recouvrement des Nations unies et les ressources fournies sur une base volontaire par l'Union européenne et d'autres partenaires offre le moyen le plus sûr pour faire avancer nos objectifs communs. Nous exhortons le Conseil de sécurité à prendre des décisions attendues de lui sur cette question du financement, en ayant en vue qu'en prenant l'initiative de déployer les opérations sur le terrain, l'Union africaine et les mécanismes régionaux agissent au nom du Conseil de sécurité, qui a la responsabilité principale du maintien de la paix et de la sécurité internationale. Monsieur le Président, Mesdames et Messieurs, en appelant le Conseil de sécurité à aider à trouver une solution durable à la question du financement des opérations de soutien à la paix conduites par l'Afrique, je ne perds évidemment pas de vue les responsabilités qui sont celles du continent. De ce point de vue, il ne fait guère de doute que le pays africain, en plus de fournir les troupes et les personnels de police nécessaires pour les opérations déployées sur le terrain, et on ne le soulignera jamais assez, des sacrifices immenses consentis dans ce cadre ont significativement accru leur contribution au financement de ces opérations. Les ressources fournies par les pays africains lors des conférences d'appel de fonds organisées par l'Union africaine en faveur de la MISMA et la MISCA sont le témoignage de cet engagement renouvelé. Les efforts engagés seront poursuivis dans le contexte plus large de la mobilisation de ressources accrues au niveau du continent pour le financement de l'Union africaine et sur une base plus durable. Il reste toutefois entendu que cet effort ne saurait se substituer à la responsabilité qui est celle du Conseil de sécurité dans le maintien de la paix et de la sécurité internationale. Je voudrais saisir cette occasion pour exprimer notre gratitude aux partenaires internationaux qui soutiennent nos opérations. Le financement fourni par l'Union européenne à travers la Facilité pour la paix en Afrique et d'autres partenaires, ainsi que l'appui logistique des États-Unis, ont grandement facilité l'action qui est la nôtre. Parallèlement au déploiement d'opérations de soutien à la paix, l'Union africaine travaille également au renforcement à long terme de ses capacités à travers l'opérationnalisation de la force africaine en attente. Celle-ci permettra de trouver les réponses plus idoines à certaines des insuffisances relevées dans les opérations concernées conduites par l'Union africaine, qu'elles aient trait à la planification, à la génération de forces, au commandement et au contrôle, qu'au soutien aux missions. Sur la base des recommandations du rapport Gambari sur l'évaluation de la force africaine en attente et de sa capacité de déploiement rapide, nombre de mesures sont en train d'être prises, l'objectif étant d'atteindre la pleine capacité opérationnelle en 2015 au plus tard. Nous nous félicitons de l'engagement renouvelé des Nations Unies à nous accompagner sur cette voie, et ce, sur la base des recommandations et de la mission consultative qui a visité Addis Abeba vers la fin du mois de mai 2014. Dans l'intervalle, la mise en place de la capacité africaine de réponse immédiate aux crises devrait renforcer significativement tant la rapidité de notre réaction aux situations d'urgence que sa robustesse. En conclusion, je forme l'espoir que la présente réunion du Conseil de sécurité marque une nouvelle étape dans le renforcement du partenariat entre les Nations Unies et les organisations régionales, en particulier l'Union africaine. La complexité des défis auxquels nous sommes confrontés exige plus que jamais une plus grande synergie des actions, davantage et de flexibilité dans l'interprétation des dispositions pertinentes de la Charte et plus de souplesse dans l'utilisation des outils à notre disposition. Sur ce plan, outre la question du financement des opérations africaines de soutien à la paix, nous devons prêter une attention accrue aux modalités de passage d'une opération africaine à une opération onusienne. Nous attendons avec intérêt l'exercice de retour d'expérience que le secrétariat des Nations Unies doit entreprendre en consultation avec l'Union africaine sur la transition entre la MISMA et la MINUSMA et celle imminente entre la MISCA et la MINUSCA. Cet exercice devrait être l'occasion d'un débat ouvert et constructif sur les modalités le meilleur pour un passage réussi d'une opération africaine à une opération onusienne. Il ne doit éluder aucune des questions en jeu, qu'il s'agisse des délais dans lesquels devrait s'opérer une transition, en gardant en vue que la création des conditions propices à une relève réussie par les Nations Unies requiert du temps du rôle politique de l'Union africaine et de ses mécanismes régionaux dans l'après-transition ou encore de la nomination du personnel dirigeant la nouvelle mission. Pour terminer, Monsieur le Président, je voudrais souhaiter à tous les musulmans une joyeuse fête d'Eid el-Fitr. Je vous remercie.
I thank Mr. Antonio for his statement. It is my understanding that the Council is ready to proceed to the vote of on the draft resolution before it. Members of the Council have before them document S/2014/532, the text of a draft resolution submitted by the submitted by Argentina, Australia, Chad, Chile, Jordan, Luxembourg, Nigeria, Republic of Korea, and Rwanda. I shall put the draft resolution to the vote now. Will those in favor of the draft resolution contained in document S/2014/532 please raise their hand? The result of the voting is as follows. The draft resolution received 15 votes in favor. The draft resolution has been adopted unanimously as Resolution 2167 of 2014. Ladies and gentlemen, I shall now make a statement in my capacity as a representative of Rwanda. Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for all being here today. I would like to thank our esteemed briefers, the Secretary General, His Excellency Ban Ki-moon, the European Union Deputy Secretary General for External Action Service, Mr. Maciej Popowski, and the Permanent Observer of the African Union to the United Nations, Ambassador Tete Antonio. I want to also recognize the presence of His Excellency Mr. Tariq Fatemi, Minister of State for Foreign Affairs and Special Assistant to the Prime Minister of Pakistan, and His Excellency Mr. Urmas Paet, who will join us later, Minister for Foreign Affairs of Estonia. Unfortunately, due to unforeseen last-minute circumstances, Madame Louise Mushikiwabo, Minister of Foreign Affairs and Cooperation of Rwanda, was not able to be here today, and she asked that I pass on her sincere apologies and regret to all council members and other distinguished delegates. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, as Rwanda comes close to the end of its presidency of the Council, we saved the best for the last, or for last. Indeed, I can think of no better way on which to end Rwanda's presidency than with this open debate and with the adoption of Resolution 2167, which is intended to bear fruit in concrete ways to strengthen coordination among partners and regional and sub-regional organizations to ensure a comprehensive strategy for effective responses to threats to international peace and security. In our assessment, we believe that this is the opportune time to hold this debate on the evolution of the UN and regional partnerships in the maintenance of international peace and security, especially in peacekeeping. As peace is shared, so are the consequences of insecurity and conflicts in the global world we live today. Indeed, the framers of the UN Charter had foreseen the need for coordination and collaboration between the UN and regional agreements in the maintenance of peace and security in its chapter 8. The spirit of the charter has been transformed into action today with an evident engagement of regional organizations in international peace operations. The challenge we have today is to instill a positive evolution for these kinds of partnership, to move from ad hoc partnerships to more structured frameworks of partnerships. We have learned from the tragic failures in Rwanda and Srebrenica 20 years ago that rapid regional engagement and response mechanisms are essential in a world where political will and defense budgets are both declining. There is an obvious need for rapid responses to often unpredictable violent conflicts and partnerships with regional organizations in Africa and elsewhere are fundamental in achieving this endeavor. Acknowledging the benefits of peacekeeping partnerships, the Security Council has adopted various resolutions and presidential statements on the subject, with the last one being Resolution 2033 in 2012, which requested the Secretary General to conduct, in consultation with the AU, the African Union, a comprehensive analysis of lessons learned from practical cooperation between the UN and the AU, in particular with regard to UNAMID in Darfur and AMISOM in Somalia. The issue has not been discussed since then, despite the fact that this council has continued to rely on partnerships with regional and sub-regional organizations to support peacekeeping efforts. When it comes to the African continent, it is clear that the AU and regional organizations often have political legitimacy, the advantages or proximity of proximity, and access to African capabilities. Partners bring funding, experience, and logistical capabilities, as well as political leverage in specific cases. All of these comparative advantages have come into play in various forms in support for African peace support operations to date, but largely on an ad hoc basis. This forum is therefore an opportunity to explore ways in which regional partners can best bring their comparative advantage to UN peacekeeping and how their operational capacities can be enhanced and supported so that they may share the peacekeeping burden and ultimately This forum is therefore an opportunity to explore ways in which regional partners can best bring their comparative advantage to UN peacekeeping and how their operational capacities can be enhanced and supported so that they may share the peacekeeping burden and ultimately make operations more effective at the strategic, operational, and tactical levels. Over the last decade, African countries, with the support of international partners, have engaged in a collective effort to develop regional capacities for peace support operations as per the creation of the AU Peace and Security Commission and the African Standby Force. As a result of these efforts, as well as of bilateral support to member states, there has been a steady improvement in African capacities to respond to crisis situations through the deployment of increasingly larger and complex peace support operations. UNAMID is no longer a one-of-kind partnership. In Mali, Somalia, Central African Republic, and South Sudan, the UN has worked with organizations, including the African Union, the Economic Community of Central African States, the Economic Community of West African States, and the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, the Southern African Development Community, and also the Eastern African Community, as well as the European Union in various peacekeeping models. Rwanda today is proud to have been part of such operations for the past 10 years, including the transitions from the AU mission in Sudan to the AU-UN hybrid mission in Darfur, and the large, and being also among the largest peacekeeping operations in the world to date, from the African-led international support mission in Mali, AFISMA, to the UN multidimensional integrated stabilization mission in Mali, and soon from the African-led international support mission to the Central African Republic to the UN multidimensional integrated stabilization mission in the Central African Republic. And with a large also presence already in the UN mission in South Sudan, Rwanda recently deployed another battalion alongside IGAD, which deployed a robust force of three battalions under UNMISS command in order to protect civilians and IGAD monitors in the face of escalating violence. We are currently in talks to deploy two military helicopters in support of the IGAD and UNMISS operations. We want also to give a special thank to all our partners, especially the United States, for their valuable support. While great things have been achieved through these and other partnerships, there are lessons to be taken away and room for improvement. The fact remains that the AU has often struggled when it comes to operational capacities, thus highlighting the importance of matching resources to mandates. Mandated missions must have adequate funds and other necessary resources, including troops that are appropriately prepared. Just last Friday, we convened an informative meeting of the Security Council Working Group on Peacekeeping Operations to discuss the issue of troop and police preparedness. We recognized the steps taken by African leaders at the Malabo Summit of last month, as well as steps by the African Union Commission to operationalize the African capacity for immediate response to crisis. The East African Community aims to have full operationalization of its standby force by December 2014, and we commend the East African Community for a remarkable achievement and its effort to generate the required contributions. We invite all regional and sub-regional organizations to accelerate the establishment of such standby arrangement systems. I believe today's resolution will help us address many of these challenges as we forge ahead, including how organizations will pool their resources together and allocate roles and responsibilities, and how we can streamline coordination process and frameworks. It lays out measurable requests and recommendations that can provide benchmarks for progress and evaluation, including in the political, operational, and financial perspectives. On a larger scale, more long-term scale, the resolution requests the Secretary General, in close consultation with the AU Commission and the European Union, to produce no later than 31st March 2015 an assessment report and recommendations on the progress of the partnerships between the UN and relevant regional organizations in peacekeeping operations. On financial cooperation and support, the resolution recognizes that one major constraint facing some regional organizations, in particular the AU, in effectively carrying out the mandate of maintaining regional peace and security is securing predictable, sustainable, and flexible resources. Rwanda, therefore, welcomes the steps taken by the chairperson of the African Union Commission to generate resources from within AU member states in support of peace support operations. But we also urge external partners to seriously consider the capacity in which they can assist regional organizations in this context. In particular, consideration should be given to the findings within the 2008 joint AU-UN report on AU peacekeeping operations, otherwise known as the Prodi report, which established that a peace support operation that is to be transferred eventually to the UN should be sponsored by the UN from the beginning via assessed contributions for 6 months before being handed over to the UN. This will truly limit ad hoc funding and unpredictable resource capacity. The AU is currently very active in peacekeeping operations that are mandated by the UN Security Council and which have transitioned or are in the process of transitioning to UN peacekeeping operations. Excellencies, distinguished delegates, colleagues, and friends, today is another step toward better structuring and elaborating upon the burden-sharing needs among African states, region and sub-region organizations, and partners, including the AU, the EU, and the UN. Today's resolution and discussions display the resolve of the international community to establish more predictable frameworks and working relationship when it comes to integrated peacekeeping operations. We must help each other to build up our unique abilities so that together we can forge a collective security system for a safer and more secure world. I thank you. So I resume my function as President of the Council. I give the floor to Her Excellency Ms. Samantha Power, Permanent Representative of the United States and member of President Obama's cabinet. You have the floor.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Secretary General, European External Action Service Deputy Secretary General Popovsky, and African Union Ambassador to the United Nations Antonio. And thank you, Ambassador Gassana, for convening and framing today's debate, which could not be more timely. Rwanda knows of what it speaks. Rwandans understand the importance of getting peacekeeping right, having experienced the catastrophic consequences of it going terribly wrong. As we meet, regional organizations are playing a more central role in peacekeeping than ever before, particularly in Africa. They have proven swift and nimble in responding to serious crises. They've been willing to take on robust protection mandates. And we've seen in the last 18 months alone, the AU and ECOWAS have deployed to address the urgent burning crises in Mali and the Central African Republic. When African countries came together in 2002 to form the new African Union, they decided they never wanted to stand by as atrocities were being committed on the continent. They refused to accept the arguments of those who said that such violence was endemic to Africa, that their newly created union lacked the capacity or the authority to stop it, and that it was not in their collective interest to intervene. They knew such atrocities could be stopped, and that they had the power and the responsibility to do so. And so they enshrined a commitment to non-indifference in the very charter establishing their new union. They committed not to turn a blind eye to atrocities. Not only does the AU have the right to intervene in the face of atrocities, but any member can request an intervention when such horrors occur. The AU Charter gives letter to the growing consensus that neighbors, regions, and the entire international community have a profound stake in the security and stability of countries in conflict. In every region of the world, we've seen that conflicts don't respect borders, especially when they are fueled by groups intent on targeting civilians and sowing terror. And ignoring these conflicts can be devastating not only for the countries and regions where they occur, but for all of us. In order for mandates to protect civilians to be effective, they must be enforced. And enforcement is the key to deterrence. Warlords and militants take notice of peacekeepers' willingness to stand up or to stand by. The failure to uphold the commitment to protect civilians in one mission can undermine the legitimacy of all of the others. That is part of why it is so troubling that according to a March report by the UN's Office of Internal Oversight Services, UN peacekeeping missions have routinely failed to use force to protect civilians under attack, despite the mandates under which they operate. Of the 507 attacks against civilians that the OIOS reviewed from 2010 to 2013, it found that peacekeeping missions almost never use force to protect civilians under attack. The Secretary General has launched a comprehensive review of peacekeeping, which needs to tackle this grave challenge head on. It should draw lessons from the leadership of Rwanda, as well as that by other countries like Ethiopia and Nepal, regarding the protection of civilians. Rwanda's troops were among the first boots on the ground when conflicts metastasized in the Central African Republic and South Sudan. And it's not just that the Rwandans volunteer for complex and dangerous missions. It's that because of their commitment to protect civilians, the population in countries where the Rwandans serve trusts them. Troops from other countries who serve alongside them draw strength from their fortitude, and aggressors who would attack civilians fear them. We recognize the many challenges to making regional and international peacekeeping missions work. The challenge of training and equipping troops, the challenge of airlifting them into theater, and the challenge of maintaining their supply lines once they're there. So we're investing deeply in regional missions as well as in the capabilities of troop-contributing countries. The United States contributed more than $500 million to the AU mission in Somalia, and $166 million toward equipment and training for the African contingents deploying to the UN mission in Mali, as well as logistic support to its African-led predecessor. And we are providing up to $100 million in similar support to the AU-led mission to CAR, MISCA. Our African Contingency Operations Training and Assistance Program has trained nearly 250,000 peacekeepers from 25 partner countries since 2005. Our support for regional initiatives is a clear affirmation of our broader commitment to making peacekeeping more effective, as well as to our partnerships with countries that contribute troops to critical missions. Next week, President Obama will meet with African heads of state at the Africa Leaders Summit in Washington, D.C., to discuss how the United States can deepen our partnership with countries that commit troops both to UN and regional peacekeeping, and how we can help them address persistent operational challenges along with other partners. This regional cooperation is in everyone's interest. First and foremost, it is in the interest of civilians threatened by violent conflicts. It is in the interest of the United Nations because regional peacekeepers often lay the foundation for the UN's multidimensional peacekeeping efforts and advance the core principles of the UN Charter. And it is in the interest of countries that send troops, countries whose stability is enhanced by the investments in training and equipment that come with such interventions, and the stability from having played a role in preventing deadly conflicts from spreading across borders. Perpetrators who commit atrocities are routinely testing peacekeepers' limits. When the first killings began in Rwanda in the spring of 1994, Romeo Dallaire, the UN force commander there at the time, appealed for reinforcements. He cabled UN headquarters and said that he could do more. He needed more, better trained peacekeepers, he said. He recognized that if he could send a clear message early on, a wholesale massacre might be averted. Regional organizations have shown that not only can they do more, but they are willing to do more. As they step forward, it is not just the people who they protect who benefit from greater peace and stability, but all of us. We owe it to regional and international peace and security and to the civilians, the many civilians in harm's way right now, to give them our full support. Thank you.
I thank Her Excellency Ms. Power for her statement. I now give the floor to the representative of the United Kingdom. Have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you for convening this timely open debate. One of the biggest strategic issues the Security Council faces is its relationship with regional organizations. These relationships are constantly evolving. We are grateful to Rwanda for this opportunity to take stock of the peacekeeping partnerships, reflect on the progress we've made, and anticipate the challenges ahead. And I thank the Secretary General and the briefers from the European Union and the African Union for their contributions this morning. Mr. President, the founders of the United Nations originally envisaged a standing UN army. This proved unrealistic. Yet the need for rapidly deployable, adequately trained, equipped, and financed troops has increased considerably since 1945. In the face of a multitude of African conflicts, the United Nations has turned in particular to the continent of Africa as a critical partner. And in response to this, the Maxim African-led solutions to African problems was developed. The United Kingdom welcomes the aspiration behind this Maxim. Mr. President, such partnerships have brought many advantages to international and regional peace and security efforts. Over the last decade, 10 African Union and regional missions have deployed. African contributions to UN peacekeeping missions have increased from roughly 10,000 troops in 2003 to more than 30,000 in 2013. The Africa Standby Force was developed and achieved notable milestones, including an annual continental training program. Good progress has also been made towards developing a quick, rapid reaction force inside the ASF. Troops in African-led missions often demonstrate the sort of proactive peacekeeping required in modern threat environments. I have in mind in particular the troops deployed in AMISOM in Somalia and in MISCA in the Central African Republic. Such troops have the attitude and skills necessary for the effective protection of civilians in terrains teeming with spoilers. Nonetheless, there is still progress to be made in the African Union and other regional organisations' development of policy, guidance and training in key areas such as child protection and the prevention of sexual and gender-based violence. We very much welcome the framework of cooperation signed between the Special Representative on Sexual Violence in Conflict and the African Union earlier this year. This demonstrates real commitment to evolve standards and practices, and we urge its speedy implementation. Mr. President, having highlighted some good progress, we should also reflect on two key challenges which threaten the delivery of rapidly deployable, adequately trained, equipped, and financed troops. First, financial resources pose a huge challenge. A key limitation to African capability on peace and security is the lack of access to adequate, timely, and predictable financing for peace support operations. This creates a break on African Union missions and for regional economic communities' activities as well. The African Union's overwhelming dependence on outside partners for its operational budget is a significant constraint on the African solutions narrative. This issue is rising up the African agenda, and as the resolution we adopted today reiterates, regional organisations have a responsibility to secure human, financial, logistical and other resources for their organisations. In the absence of a ready solution, the United Kingdom is pleased that the European Union has been able to be a supporting partner to AMISOM and MISCA through the African Peace Facility. But this cannot go on forever. A better means of financing African peace support operations and more sustainable financial arrangements must be found. If African nations are serious about taking greater responsibility for solving the continent's problems, they need to be prepared to devote more of their own resources to the task. Secondly, the transition from African missions to UN peacekeeping operations raises a number of challenges. In Mali, we saw a failure to deploy critical enablers ahead of troops, an inability to raise the number of troops deployed or to deploy them at sufficient pace. We need to learn the lessons for the Central African Republic, where difficulties are also looming ahead of the 15 September handover date to MINUSCA. We therefore welcome the request in Resolution 2167 for a full lessons learned exercise for both transitions. The challenges of re-hatting an African Union mission into a UN one has yet to be resolved. Mr. President, looking beyond the African Union, the United Kingdom also commends the increasing cooperation between NATO and the UN in the sharing of doctrine, training and best practice. The traditional peacekeeping model of an interpositional force has been superseded by a more multidimensional model, often with protection of civilians at its core. The UN Secretariat should continue to forge close ties with organisations able and willing to share their expertise and comparative advantages. Mr. President, I wish to highlight two important aspects of the resolution we adopted today. First, the comprehensive review of UN peacekeeping, which the Secretary-General announced in June and referenced this morning. the relationship with regional organisations will no doubt form a key element of this review. We encourage the Secretary-General to be bold in his vision whilst ensuring concrete gains for peacekeeping. In particular, we need to strategically assess which of the seven current different models of UN peacekeeping are most fit for purpose and ensure that we use them in the right circumstances. Second, I am pleased to note the encouragement to greater engagement between the African Union peacekeeping support team within DPKO and the UN office to the African Union. Partnerships should be operational as well as strategic. Mr. President, finally, let me end by paying tribute to men and women serving under all banners on peace and security operations. These individuals make up the forces of the United Nations, the African Union, European Union, and other regional missions. They demonstrate on a daily basis the importance of working in close partnership to maintain peace and security in the most perilous of locations. The risks they take to make our world a safer place must never be forgotten. I thank you.
Thank the representative of United Kingdom. I give now the floor to the representative of Russian Federation. He has the floor.
Господин председатель, я благодарю вас. Я благодарю вас. Я всегда знал, что вы настоящий друг. Я всегда знал, что вы настоящий друг, господин председатель. Мы признательны вам за организацию сегодняшних открытых дебатов. Благодарим генерального секретаря ООН за содержательный брифинг. Внимательно выслушали представителей Африканского Союза и ЕС. В последние годы Совет Безопасности неоднократно обращал внимание на необходимость активизации практического сотрудничества с региональными и субрегиональными организациями в деле поддержания международного мира и безопасности. Сегодняшние дебаты – еще одно подтверждение того значения, которое Совет придает важной задаче выработки коллективных подходов по формированию эффективных стратегий предотвращения и мирного разрешения конфликтных ситуаций. Исходим из того, что такое сотрудничество должно опираться на твердую основу Устава Организации Объединенных Наций, в частности, его главу 8. Неоспоримо, что региональные и субрегиональные организации обладают лучшим знанием обстановки в своем регионе, располагают более подстроенными под местную специфику превентивными и миротворческими механизмами. Такие сравнительные преимущества, помноженные на универсальный характер ООН, ее всемирно признанную легитимность, создают уникальный миротворческий потенциал. При этом важно, чтобы партнеры действовали гармонично, не дублируя свои усилия и не создавая лишних препятствий в работе, которая должна быть нацелена прежде всего на поиск политико-дипломатических путей предотвращения и урегулирования конфликтов. Господин председатель, в многолетнюю историю сотрудничества ООН с региональными и субрегиональными организациями на миротворческом треке вписано немало ярких страниц достижения долгосрочных результатов совместными усилиями, принесшими мир и процветание в различные страны мира. Эти успехи основаны на выполнении заложенных в мандаты четких, реалистичных и адекватных ситуаций задач, обеспеченных необходимыми силами, средствами и ресурсами. Безусловный императив при этом – строгое соблюдение базовых принципов миротворчества, согласие принимающей стороны, нейтральность и применение силы строго в соответствии с мандатом. Отход от этих принципов и явный крен в сторону использования в первую очередь принудительных и военно-силовых методов чреваты далеко идущими дестабилизирующими последствиями и способны подчас антагонизировать местное общество. В основе партнерства Всемирной организации и региональных объединений лежит признание уставного принципа главной ответственности Совета Безопасности ООН в вопросах поддержания международного мира и безопасности. В первую очередь это относится к обязательному санкционированию Советом и контролю с его стороны за региональными и коалиционными миротворческими операциями, предусматривающими применение силы. Нельзя забывать об императиве адекватной отчетности перед Советом. Экспертиза Всемирной организации может быть весьма востребована на таких направлениях, как планирование и проведение региональных операций, содействие формированию адекватной структуры командования. Господин председатель, особое место в сети традиционных партнеров ООН занимает Африканский Союз. Обширный опыт уважительного взаимодействия обеих организаций в различных областях является полезным ориентиром и для других региональных объединений в плане выстраивания эффективной парадигмы сотрудничества. Подчеркиваем совместные усилия двух организаций в Дарфуре, Сомали, на межсуданском треке. Не менее важно продолжать наращивать координацию действий в отношении конфликтных ситуаций в Южном Судане, Центральноафриканской Республике и Мали. Господин председатель, в этой связи не могу не вспомнить, что в ходе российского председательства в Совете Безопасности в июне мы провели очередную традиционную, очень плодотворную встречу здесь, в Нью-Йорке, с нашими коллегами из Совета мира и безопасности Африканского Союза. Положительной оценки заслуживает опыт многопланового взаимодействия ООН с экономическим сообществом западноафриканских государств, которое показало себя надежным партнером Всемирной организации в деле урегулирования конфликтов в этом субрегионе. В отдельных страновых сюжетах видим добавленную стоимость в содействии, в том числе финансовом, со стороны Европейского Союза. Большой потенциал заложен в сотрудничестве между ООН и Лигой арабских государств. Хорошие перспективы имеет расширение контактов с такими динамично развивающимися структурами, как СИЛАК и УНАСУР. Не упускаем из вида и важность сотрудничества ООН с Организацией договора о коллективной безопасности и Шанхайской организацией сотрудничества, которые наращивают свой политический авторитет в мире и вклад в укрепление региональной и международной безопасности. Перспективным видится углубление взаимодействия между ООН и ОДКБ в области миростроительства, миротворчества, что нашло отражение и в принятой сегодня резолюции Совета Безопасности 2167. В рамках ОДКБ идет интенсивная работа по развитию собственного миротворческого потенциала, в том числе для задействования в операциях ООН по поддержанию мира. Наряду с этим ОДКБ активно содействует международным усилиям по постконфликтному обустройству Афганистана, нейтрализации исходящей с его территории наркоугрозы. Господин председатель, мы неизменно выступаем за дальнейшее расширение и углубление взаимодействия между ООН и региональными организациями на базе главы 8 Устава ООН для продвижения благородных целей Всемирной организации. Надеемся, что сегодняшняя дискуссия позволит придать дополнительный импульс процессу совершенствования многовекторного взаимодействия ООН с региональными организациями в рамках укрепления коллективной безопасности в мире на основе Устава ООН и норм международного права. В заключение хотели бы выразить признательность делегации Руанды за эффективную координацию процесса подготовки проекта резолюции Совета Безопасности, который мы приняли в ходе сегодняшнего заседания. Я благодарю вас, господин председатель.
I thank the representative of Russian Federation. You can always count on my friendship. So I have now China. I give the floor to the representative of China. Have the floor, sir.
谢谢主席先生。中国代表团 高度赞赏卢旺达倡议召开今天的公开辩论会。我感谢潘基文秘书长的通报，并认真听取了欧盟和非盟代表的发言。联合国维和行动作为联合国维护国际和平与安全的重要手段，60多年来为解决冲突和争端、 恢复和建设和平做出了重要贡献。近年来，联合国与非盟等区域和次区域组织以联合国宪章第八章为指导，不断加强维和领域合作，在苏丹达尔富尔、索马里、马里、中非、南苏丹等维和行动中取得了有目共睹的 积极成果。这既是新形势下国际集体安全机制的重要发展，也日益成为缓解冲突、维护非洲乃至世界和平与稳定的有效途径之一。我们也应看到 当前非洲面临的各种安全威胁与挑战相互交织，安全形势仍十分脆弱，非洲等区域组织的维和努力受到人力、物力和财力等因素的制约。联合国在维和行动战略规划、行动部署及沟通协调等层面需进一步加强与非盟等区域组织的合作，切实支持非洲区域组织为维护地区和平稳定做出的努力。我愿强调以下四点：第一，联合国与非盟等区域组织加强维和行动合作，应坚持以联合国宪章为指导。安理会对维护国际和平与安全负有首要责任，同时，非盟等区域组织可在斡旋、调解争端、部署维和行动等方面发挥积极作用。区域组织经安理会授权部署的维和行动，应充分体现联合国宪章宗旨和原则，在采取强制行动时，应严格遵守安理会决议授权，坚持维和行动的基本原则。第二，联合国与区域组织加强协调，充分发挥各自优势，形成合力。非洲许多问题成因复杂，需要综合解决方案。非盟等非洲国家组成非洲主导的区域组织，在调解争端、开展维和行动等方面具有独特的地域、历史和文化优势。联合国与非盟等区域组织应在平等、互利、互补基础上探讨建立灵活务实、形式多样的沟通合作机制。就维和行动战略规划、行动部署、后勤管理和支持等加强合作，共同提高维和行动的时效和效率。第三，加强维和能力建设应成为联合国与非盟等区域组织合作的重点领域。联合国和国际社会应积极回应非盟等区域组织的要求，在维和人员培训、机制建设、后勤援助、资源管理等方面，向非洲区域和次区域组织提供更多支持，并在资金与技术合作等方面探讨新的合作模式，为调动国际社会支持非盟能力建设发挥重要作用。第四，不断总结经验，妥善应对区域组织维和行动向联合国维和行动过渡过程中的各项挑战。去年以来，非洲在马里、中非等地维和行动过渡为联合国维和行动过程中，在行动衔接、与出兵国沟通、后勤支助等方面遇到不少挑战。我们希望联合国在有关过渡问题上重视听取非盟等区域组织的意见和建议，积极回应非洲关切，为实现非洲区域组织与联合国维和行动的顺畅衔接创造有利条件。中方高度赞赏并支持非盟等区域组织在非洲和平与安全事务中发挥重要作用，一直以实际行动 为维护非洲和平与稳定做出贡献。中国大力支持并积极参与联合国在非洲的维和行动。从刚果金到利比里亚，从马里到苏丹，近2000名中国维和人员正在7项非洲维和行动中执行任务。 中国国家主席习近平去年访问非洲时，提出了中方发展对非关系的真、实、亲、诚理念。今年5月，中国国务院总理李克强访问非盟总部，双方签署了进一步 加强在和平与安全事务等领域友好合作的联合声明。中方高度重视对非关系，将继续积极支持非盟等区域组织为维护非洲和平与安全做出的努力，深入落实中非和平安全合作伙伴倡议， 帮助非洲增强维和能力建设，并与国际社会共同努力，为推动联合国与非盟等区域组织加强维和合作，共同促进非洲和平与发展事业发挥建设性作用。谢谢主席先生。
The representative of China, I give now the floor to the representative of Lithuania. You have the floor.
Mr. President, I thank the Rwandan delegation for organizing this timely, as others have said, debate on United Nations and regional partnerships with a focus on Africa. Africa's regional and sub-regional organizations have been actively involved in seeking solutions to conflicts on the continent. And their cooperation with the UN and other regional partners such as the European Union have evolved significantly over the years. I would also like to thank the Secretary General and the representatives of the African Union and the European Union for their briefings. We welcome the unanimous adoption of the resolution on regional partnerships in peacekeeping and appreciate the efforts of Rwandan presidency in leading the negotiations. Lithuania aligns itself with a statement made on behalf of the European Union. Whether troop deployment, provision of logistical and financial support, or working side by side in implementing multidimensional mandates, participation of regional and sub-regional actors today is an indispensable and increasingly regular part of modern peacekeeping. Regional peacekeeping frequently offers faster deployment timelines and much-needed troop numbers that can literally make a difference between life and death. Such involvement strengthens regional ownership of the peace efforts and bolsters continuous commitment by the countries of the region that share a strong interest in the sustainability and success of the peacekeeping effort. Involvement of regional or sub-regional actors, as noted in the presidency's concept paper, also brings better understanding of the context and root causes of a specific conflict, thus enabling to address the situation in a more specific and effective manner. The active engagement of the African Union, as well as ECOWAS, IGAD, SADC, and ECAS in bringing peace to conflict-torn areas speaks for itself. These organizations, in close cooperation with UN and other regional actors, perform an essential function in peacekeeping itself, as well as conducting critical mediation efforts at times of crisis. IGAD's role in the case of South Sudan, one example among many, is an excellent case in point. In the case of Mali, again, a number of regional actors, including the AU, ECOWAS, the EU, and others, have been continuously engaged in searching durable solutions. Regional partnerships, however, are not immune to the critical obstacles and concerns faced by the UN peacekeeping operations in general, including clarity of the mandate, capability and training gaps, logistical hurdles, lack of critical enablers, or insufficient coordination among mission components. Close cooperation, coordination, and synergies between and among regional actors and the United Nations therefore play an essential role in ensuring mission success. Drawing and applying lessons from such joint undertakings for the sake of mission effectiveness and success is therefore key, as seen from the assessment of existing missions involving UN and regional components. The experience to date, although generally positive, definitely offers room for improvement. UNAMID is an important case in terms of lessons learned. The African Union UN hybrid operation in Darfur replaced the African Union operation in 2008 with the aim to bolster the protection of civilians and support the overall peace process by deploying additional troops and increasing financial resources dedicated to the task. 6 years later, it is UN's second largest mission with almost 23,000 personnel, and its most expensive one with a cost of $1.3 billion a year, drawing criticism from various sides. While undoubtedly UNAMID did have a positive impact on the situation in Darfur, it has also suffered from a number of problems, including a high number of casualties among peacekeepers themselves, a lack of cooperation from the host government, chronic shortages of equipment and enablers, as well as capability and internal coordination issues. Its record of protection of civilians has been subject to criticism. The Office of Internal Oversight Services described it as highly ineffective and generally passive, while other reports highlighted unwillingness to report human rights abuses and Khartoum's involvement in supporting armed groups. This prompted serious thinking about the mission's future and refocusing its mandate, which would hopefully result in a more effective mandate implementation. In this respect, this particular mission can offer useful lessons for the future, which would enable new missions to avoid some of the difficulties UNAMID had to go through. In Somalia, the African Union mission AMISOM, with logistical and financial support by the UN, the European Union, and other partners, has been instrumental in making considerable advances against Al-Shabaab militants. Its transition from maintaining an essentially defensive posture to mounting an offense against militants was possible largely due to an increased number of troops and, most importantly, willingness by the main troop contributors to robustly implement the mandate. The sustainability of military gains against Al-Shabaab needs to be reinforced through the establishment of effective local governance and addressing the security and economic needs of the population. This enormous task will continue to be undertaken by a number of UN system entities, as well as regional efforts such as IGAD and EU mission, which provides training to the Somali National Armed Forces, including on protection of civilians, international humanitarian law, and human rights. If we look at the Central African Republic, the stepping in of AU's micropacts prevented even greater atrocities from happening. Its successor MISCA, in cooperation with French Operation Sangaris, made a critical difference in protecting civilians and restoring basic security. In view of the complexity of the tasks ahead, MISCA will transition to a UN operation by mid-September to benefit from UN's experience in deploying multidimensional operations directed at addressing the root causes of the conflict. Joint UN-AU efforts in Central African Republic will continue to be complemented by EU4 CAR aimed at ensuring secure environment at the Bangui area. These are but a few examples of the ever more complex and multidimensional peacekeeping missions, with the involvement of regional actors, each offering specific lessons for future missions of the kind. A key element is advanced cooperative planning and early consultations on mission type, political strategic objectives, desired end state, tentative timelines, and exit strategies. Adequate training of troops, especially as mandates go robust, with the critical tasks of protection of civilians is essential, also in human rights law and international humanitarian law. Targeted training on gender sensitivity, protecting women and children in armed conflict, and combating rape as a tool of war must remain at the core of all peacekeeping training. To make the United Nations and regional partnerships work better, comparative strengths and requirements of all actors should be identified, mandates and responsibilities clearly defined, clear command and control structures put in place, and resources assured. As a concept paper points out, the current planning processes of the regional partners in Africa could benefit from improvement. To address this, the EU, through its African Peace Facility capacity building component, is working to increase the capacity of the AU and of regional economic communities in planning and conduct of peace operations. But then we're also keenly aware that as effective as peacekeeping cooperation may be, they can only deliver up to the point. However effective and well-coordinated a peacekeeping operation is, comprehensive efforts are required, including putting an end to impunity, justice and reconciliation processes, strengthening of the rule of law, institution building, solid good governance and human rights framework, and creating a solid framework for long-term economic development. While these peace-building processes can be started by UN and regional actors, their sustainability can only succeed if national capacities are developed and national ownership of the processes is ensured. with an aim to assist in developing such national capacities. European Union established a number of military and civilian training missions in Africa and elsewhere, working in areas spanning from enhancing border security and maritime capacities to combating terrorist and organized crime. Lithuania is proud to contribute to these efforts in Mali, for example, where our military advisors are part of the EU training mission aimed at improving the military capacity of the Malian armed forces. In 2013, Lithuania also deployed troops to the EU anti-piracy mission, Atalanta, and now participates in the NATO operation Ocean Shield, combating piracy off the Horn of Africa. In each case, we get to appreciate the values and effectiveness of cooperation between the UN and regional organizations. And once again, we thank the Rwandan presidency for giving this opportunity today to review the related successes as well as concerns, also in view of the larger review announced by the Secretary General. Let me conclude by expressing our deepest appreciation and respect for thousands of men and women, peacekeepers, military, police, or civilians, who dedicate themselves to the noble goal of protecting others and all too often sacrifice their own lives in the line of duty. I thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of Lithuania for her statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Luxembourg. You have the floor.
Monsieur le Président, je remercie le Rwanda d'avoir organisé sous sa présidence cet important débat public. Cette initiative illustre bien votre engagement en tant qu'important contributeur de troupes aux missions des Nations Unies et de l'Union africaine et votre engagement en faveur d'une collaboration accrue entre l'ONU et les organisations régionales dans le domaine du maintien de la paix. Mes remerciements vont aussi au secrétaire général, à l'observateur permanent de l'Union africaine et au secrétaire général adjoint du Service européen pour l'action extérieure pour leur présentation. Monsieur le Président, la coopération entre les Nations Unies et les organisations régionales est indispensable pour maintenir la paix et la sécurité internationale. Les exemples du Mali et de la République centrafricaine le montrent. Les organisations régionales qui agissent sous mandat des Nations Unies voient leur légitimité accrue et peuvent obtenir un appui de l'ONU en cas de besoin. En retour, les Nations Unies peuvent bénéficier de l'expertise et de moyens opérationnels des organisations régionales. C'est sur le continent africain que la coopération entre l'ONU et les organisations régionales est la plus visible et la plus nécessaire. Au Soudan, y compris au Darfour et au Soudan du Sud, l'ONU et l'Union africaine travaillent la main dans la main. Il est important à cet égard que le Conseil de sécurité continue d'appuyer résolument le travail de médiation entrepris par le groupe de mise en œuvre de haut niveau de l'Union africaine. Nous espérons que ce soutien pourra être exprimé à l'occasion d'un prochain dialogue avec le président Mbeki. Autre exemple de partenariat, au Soudan du Sud, un accord a été trouvé pour intégrer au sein de la MINUS la force proposée par l'IGAD pour appuyer les mécanismes de supervision et de vérification de l'accord de cessation des hostilités. Pour éviter le pire en République centrafricaine, l'Union africaine et la CEAC ont allié leurs efforts en créant la mission internationale de soutien à la Centrafrique sous conduite africaine, la MISCA, avec l'appui du Conseil de sécurité. La MISCA a sauvé beaucoup de vies et prépare le terrain pour la MINUSCA, la mission multidimensionnelle intégrée des Nations Unies pour la stabilisation en RCA. Pour sa part, le Luxembourg a apporté une contribution financière à l'Union africaine afin de renforcer la MISCA en vue de la transition vers la MINUSCA. Et nous participons à l'opération européenne EUFAR-RCA, dont l'action de sécurisation à Bangui doit faciliter cette transition. En tant que membre de l'Union européenne, le Luxembourg se félicite du solide partenariat qui existe entre les Nations Unies et l'Union européenne, un partenariat qui bénéficie en premier lieu à l'Afrique. La coopération UE-ONU couvre la réponse immédiate aux crises, l'action humanitaire, le maintien et la consolidation de la paix et le développement. Comme l'exposé de M. Popovski l'a illustré, les synergies entre l'ONU et l'Union européenne sur les théâtres d'opérations où elles interviennent côte à côte sont appréciables. C'est le cas en RCA, mais aussi en République démocratique du Congo, en Somalie et au Mali, en particulier dans le domaine de la réforme du secteur de la sécurité. L'Europe soutient le développement des capacités africaines de gestion de crise à travers la formation et l'équipement. En 2016, plus de 17 000 militaires africains auront été formés avec l'appui des Européens, certains d'entre eux au Mali et en Somalie par des instructeurs luxembourgeois. Le soutien de l'Union européenne et de ses États membres se matérialise également par leur contribution substantielle au budget des opérations de l'ONU et des missions africaines, en particulier à travers la facilité de soutien à la paix pour l'Afrique. La présence de plusieurs opérations sur un même théâtre d'opérations renforce le besoin de coordination au niveau politique, au niveau opérationnel et au niveau financier. Cette coordination implique un échange constant d'informations et d'expériences à tous les niveaux de la chaîne de commandement afin de rendre les interventions plus efficaces et efficientes. Dans cet esprit, nous sommes favorables à l'approfondissement de la coopération triangulaire entre les Nations unies, l'Union africaine et l'Union européenne. Monsieur le Président, je conclurai en soulignant que la contribution des organisations régionales est également essentielle pour protéger les enfants dans les conflits armés, que ce soit à travers leur coopération avec le bureau de la représentante spéciale Laila Serougui et l'UNICEF, l'élaboration de directives sur les enfants et les conflits armés, la prise en compte de la protection de l'enfance dans la planification de leurs opérations, la formation de leur personnel ou le déploiement sur le terrain de spécialistes de la protection de l'enfance. La résolution préparée par le Rwanda et que nous avons co-parrainé, met cet aspect à juste titre en exergue. Dans ce domaine de la protection des enfants dans les conflits armés, comme dans d'autres, l'ONU et les organisations régionales peuvent faire la différence en travaillant de concert et de façon complémentaire. En tant que membre fondateur de l'ONU, de l'Union européenne et de nombreuses organisations régionales sur le continent européen, le Luxembourg n'épargnera aucun effort pour y contribuer. Je vous remercie.
I thank the representative of Luxembourg for her statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Australia. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. Certainly, thank you for Rwanda's very strong leadership of the Council this month, excuse me, and for your country's significant contribution to peacekeeping, a task to which Rwanda's own history brings both deep empathy and an operational determination. I thank the Secretary-General for his briefing and Ambassador Tete Antonio and Mr. Popovsky for their remarks, and certainly recognise the indispensable role of the African and European Unions as partners in our collective efforts to maintain peace and security. We were, of course, pleased to co-sponsor today's resolution. The need for effective cooperation between the UN and regional organisations is, as we know, self-evident. No single organisation alone can conduct all the multifaceted tasks required to support and consolidate peace around the globe. Cooperation between the UN and regional organisations lies at the very heart of peacekeeping, drawing on their unique strengths and distinct comparative advantages, born of their deep knowledge of local context, cultural understanding and moral authority. Regional organisations are deploying, often as first responders, into volatile environments to help protect civilians and save lives. We've seen this pointedly in places such as Somalia and in the Central African Republic. At a time when the world is torn by more simultaneous peace and security crises than for decades, when civilians in larger numbers are under greater threat from conflict than at any time since World War II, and as the demand for peacekeeping therefore intensifies, we must accelerate our efforts to foster predictability and trust in our partnerships. By strengthening mechanisms for forthright dialogue at both the strategic and operational levels, we can better achieve unified views on key issues of mutual interest, and importantly, translate them into actual results on the ground. This engagement should be anchored in the knowledge that we cannot rely on ad hoc improvisation. We must develop a broader strategy for anticipating and responding to future challenges together, and we must embed robust peacekeeping operations with protection of civilians at their core. As more regional organisations become involved in peacekeeping, we must continue to strive for greater coherence and interoperability, as you've said, greater structure. We need to enhance early engagement between the UN and regional organisations during the planning and transition phases of a peacekeeping mission. In our own region, Australia has seen the rewards of inclusive cooperation and well-planned transition between regional peace missions, host nations and UN officers. The strong participation of regional partner organisations in Solomon Islands, for instance, and the transition to peace in Timor-Leste after the drawdown of a UN peacekeeping operation and the International Stabilisation Force show that such arrangements can be highly instrumental. Above all, we need to improve our collective capacity for rapid deployment in response to emerging crises and, critically, those that endanger civilians. No organisation has yet developed an enduring solution to this persistent and increasing challenge. We welcome the AU's progress in this area and the commitment made by the African leaders to operationalise the African capacity for immediate response to crisis. And we call on all member states to support the development of policies, guidelines, doctrine and training for the African Standby Force as part of the African peace and security architecture. The concept note for today's debate rightfully highlights the situation in Africa. It's where, as we know, 8 out of every 10 UN peacekeepers are deployed and where so much of the Council's attention is focused. We also acknowledge the important role the EU plays, having launched some 30 peace missions and operations contributing to stabilisation and security since 2003, including many in Africa. Australia and the EU will soon conclude an agreement providing the legal basis for Australia to participate in the EU's common security and defence policy missions. As today's resolution reminds us, regional organisations are responsible for securing their own human, financial and logistical resources, but international partners must improve the predictability, sustainability and flexibility of financing for regional organisations participating in peacekeeping under a UN mandate. In doing so, our focus should be on improving the capability of regional peacekeepers and on building a culture of efficiency, accountability and transparency. We must embrace cost-effective, force-multiplying technologies to strengthen the impact of peacekeeping. By improving the technical standards of individual units, we can improve interoperability and boost operational effectiveness at a relatively lower cost. We must also invest more in our capacity to undertake effective conflict prevention, mediation and peace building. Australia emphasises the instrumental role, indeed at times even decisive role, of policing in multidimensional peacekeeping operations. We reiterate that the role of women in peace and security must be fully mainstreamed in all mandates. Without the engagement of and awareness of the effects of conflict on women and girls, there simply can be no lasting solution to conflict. To conclude, Mr. President, we've witnessed a sharp increase in demand for peacekeeping in recent years as complex, often simultaneous crises across the globe have multiplied. We can expect this to increase. The trajectory looks even worse. We must harness our combined strengths to maximise our capacity to meet these challenges. It's a very simple truism that regional organisations need a strong UN and the UN needs strong regional organisations. Thank you.
Representative of Australia for his statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Chad.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Merci, Monsieur le Président. Je tiens à féliciter la présidence rwandaise d'avoir pris l'initiative de cette séance sur l'évolution du partenariat entre l'ONU et les organisations régionales dans le domaine du maintien de la paix et remercie M. Ban Ki-moon, secrétaire général des Nations Unies, M. Popovski de l'Union européenne et M. Tete Antonio de l'Union africaine de leur exposé. Je vais axer mon intervention sur le partenariat entre l'ONU et l'Union africaine et ferai à cet égard 3 observations respectivement sur les aspects politiques, opérationnels et financiers. Sur le plan politique, nonobstant la primauté du Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies, les dispositions du chapitre 8 de la Charte des Nations Unies ont prévu et encouragent les accords avec les entités régionales aux fins du maintien de la paix et de la sécurité internationale. À cet égard, il est important que l'ONU établisse et renforce les partenariats effectifs avec les organisations régionales et sous-régionales. Nous nous réjouissons en particulier du partenariat et de la coopération entre l'ONU et l'Union africaine dans le domaine du maintien de la paix. Nous saluons la réunion annuelle des membres du Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies et du Conseil de paix et de sécurité de l'Union africaine, les consultations entre le secrétariat de l'ONU et la Commission de l'Union africaine entre leurs départements respectifs et encourageons les échanges de personnel et partage de connaissances entre l'ONU et l'Union africaine à tous les niveaux et dans tous les domaines. L'Union africaine qui a succédé à l'OUA est une organisation certes jeune, mais engagée, audacieuse et déterminée. Ses avantages comparatifs, à savoir une capacité rapide de déploiement, une prise de risque plus accrue, y compris en imposant la paix là où elle n'existe pas, et une proximité géographique, culturelle, linguistique et historique lui conférant une meilleure compréhension des réalités sur le terrain sont indéniables. Malgré la faiblesse des ressources financières, humaines, matérielles et en logistique, l'Union africaine a déployé plusieurs opérations de maintien de la paix sur le continent, notamment la mission de l'Union africaine au Soudan, AMIS, puis la mission hybride des Nations Unies et de l'Union africaine au Darfour, MINUAD, la mission de l'Union africaine en Somalie, AMISOM, la mission internationale de soutien au Mali sous conduite africaine, MISMA, et la mission internationale de soutien à la Centrafrique sous conduite africaine, MISCA, avec l'assentiment du Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies. Ces opérations régionales ont grandement contribué à la paix et à la sécurité internationale. Il faut rappeler que l'Afrique figure en bonne place à l'ordre du jour du Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies, avec 8 opérations des Nations Unies sur 16 déployées sur le continent, et tous les 6 pays actuellement à l'ordre du jour de la Commission de consolidation de la paix sont africains. À cela, il faut ajouter les crises en République centrafricaine, au Soudan du Sud et en Afrique du Nord, notamment en Libye, ainsi que les menaces telles que le terrorisme, le crime organisé, les trafics en tout genre dans la région du Sahel et la piraterie maritime dans le golfe de Guinée et au large des côtes somaliennes. Ces multiples crises sont une raison de plus pour renforcer le partenariat et il faut, dans le respect mutuel, approfondir et diversifier les rencontres et consultations entre l'ONU et l'Union africaine avant la prise des décisions importantes relatives à la paix et à la sécurité sur le continent. Les deux organisations peuvent et doivent mieux faire en ce qui concerne la prévention des conflits et la médiation, ainsi qu'en matière de maintien et de consolidation de la paix en Afrique. Nous demandons aux Nations Unies, aux partenaires bilatéraux et multilatéraux, d'aider l'Union africaine à opérationnaliser au plus vite son architecture de paix et de sécurité, et en particulier le projet de la force de réaction rapide, la capacité africaine de réponse immédiate aux crises CARIC. Sur le plan opérationnel, malgré les initiatives louables, la bonne volonté et la détermination de l'Union africaine et des communautés économiques régionales, telles que la Communauté économique des États d'Afrique de l'Ouest, CEDEAO, l'Autorité intergouvernementale pour le développement, IGAD, la Communauté de développement d'Afrique australe, SADC, et la Communauté économique des États d'Afrique centrale, CEAC, à régler les conflits sur le continent. Celle-ci demeure la plupart du temps confrontée à des défis importants dans le domaine des ressources, des équipements et de la logistique. Les insuffisances des États et des organisations sous-régionales et régionales africaines sont généralement compensées par les Nations Unies et les partenaires bilatéraux qui apportent l'appui nécessaire, que ce soit pour le déploiement par la voie aérienne et des contingents ou même de leur dotation en équipement. Nous pouvons atténuer ces faiblesses dans le cadre d'un partenariat sud-sud et même intra-africain pour renforcer nos capacités et ne pas compter exclusivement sur des apports extérieurs. De même, la coordination, le partage d'informations ainsi que la collaboration permettent d'améliorer la qualité des analyses de situation, la planification et la conduite des opérations de maintien de la paix. À cet égard, nous saluons la revue conjointe ONU-Union africaine de l'AMISOM et les missions d'évaluation conjointe ONU-Union africaine avant la transformation des opérations africaines en opérations de maintien de la paix des Nations Unies. Sur le plan financier, nous saluons l'apport des Nations Unies, de l'Union européenne et des partenaires bilatéraux et multilatéraux aux opérations de maintien de la paix de l'Union africaine. Le Fonds d'affectation spéciale des Nations Unies, la facilité de paix pour l'Afrique de l'Union européenne et les contributions volontaires des partenaires ont été très utiles aux opérations de maintien de la paix de l'Union africaine, en particulier pour la MISSOM en Somalie. Nous saluons la transformation de la MISMA en mission multidimensionnelle intégrée des Nations Unies pour la stabilisation au Mali, MINUSMA, et attendons celle de la MISCA en mission multidimensionnelle intégrée de stabilisation des Nations Unies en Centrafrique le 15 septembre prochain. Concernant la MISSOM, il convient de faire des efforts supplémentaires pour renforcer sa capacité civile afin de contribuer à la stabilisation des zones nouvellement libérées et de mettre à sa disposition un appui maritime pour assurer la surveillance des côtes somaliennes. Aussi, nous notons avec satisfaction l'augmentation des effectifs de la mission et l'appui à l'armée nationale somalienne à travers un fonds d'affectation spéciale. Par ailleurs, nous demandons au Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies de réexaminer l'embargo sur les armes imposé à la Somalie afin de faciliter la fourniture d'armes et d'autres matériels aux forces de défense et de sécurité somaliennes, car la MISSOM n'a pas vocation à demeurer éternellement dans le pays. Vu le contexte actuel caractérisé par la conjoncture économique et financière, il convient de promouvoir sur le continent les opérations africaines mandatées par le Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies, car celles-ci sont de loin moins coûteuses comparées à celles de l'ONU et font de plus en plus preuve d'efficacité. À cet égard, la MISSOM, qui est un exemple concret de partenariat entre l'ONU et l'Union africaine, ainsi qu'avec l'Union européenne et les autres partenaires, pourrait servir de modèle si des contributions budgétaires plus importantes, y compris obligatoires des Nations Unies, étaient disponibles. Nous appelons les États membres et les partenaires à verser des contributions volontaires au Fonds de la paix de l'Union africaine et demandons au Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies de mettre à la disposition de l'Union africaine les ressources nécessaires lui permettant de contribuer davantage à la paix et à la sécurité internationale. Il est temps que toutes les recommandations du rapport Prodi visant à garantir des financements et des ressources prévisibles, souples et durables soient prises en compte et actualisées. Pour finir, nous rendons hommage à tous les contingents africains pour le travail accompli sur le terrain, en dépit des moyens limités et des difficultés rencontrées, exprimons notre gratitude aux Nations Unies, à l'Union européenne et aux partenaires bilatéraux et multilatéraux. Le Tchad demeure engagé à contribuer à la paix et à la sécurité internationale, comme en témoignent ses engagements précédents aux côtés de la Centrafrique, respectivement dans le cadre de la mission interafricaine de surveillance des accords de Bangui, MISAB, la force multinationale en Centrafrique, FOMUC, la force multinationale des États d'Afrique centrale, FOMAC, la mission de consolidation de la paix en Centrafrique, MICOPAX, et la mission internationale de soutien à la Centrafrique sous conduite africaine, MISCA, et aux côtés du Mali dans le cadre de la mission internationale de soutien au Mali sous conduite africaine, MISMA, devenue aujourd'hui MINUSMA. Je vous remercie.
I thank the representative of Chad for his statement. I give the floor now to the representative of Nigeria. Have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. First, I would like to thank you and the delegation of Rwanda for organizing this important and very timely debate, and for the concept note provided to guide our discussions. We want to thank the Secretary General for his relentless pursuit of global peace. We thank also the permanent observer of the African Union to the UN and the Deputy Secretary General of the European External Action Service for their profound, thoughtful, and inspiring briefings. In recognition of the complementary role which regional organizations can play in the peaceful settlement of disputes, Boutros Ghali observed in 1992, in his report titled An Agenda for Peace, that, and I quote, "The future security order should realize the promise of Chapter 8, because regional action could foster security and contribute to a deeper sense of participation, consensus, and democratization in international affairs, end quote. He recommended that the Security Council should grant authority to a regional organization during a crisis situation. Mr. President, United Nations peacekeeping efforts have since involved regional and sub-regional organizations in peacekeeping operations across the globe. This is evident in the joint efforts of the United Nations with the ASEAN, NATO, OAS, the AU, and ECOWAS. For example, ECOWAS, through ECOMOG, its peacekeeping arm, responded effectively and helped to stabilize the situation in Liberia, in Sierra Leone, and in Guinea-Bissau prior to the deployment of UN missions. The increasing demand for peacekeeping missions and the multidimensional nature of contemporary peacekeeping operations calls for a more robust partnership between the UN and regional organizations. We believe that the time is ripe to reflect on ways of improving the peacekeeping capabilities of regional organizations in order to effectively complement the peacekeeping efforts of the UN. A cursory overview of the UN peacekeeping operations since 1948 indicates a total of 69 operations undertaken up to date, including 54 past and 15 current operations. Out of the 54 past operations, 22, representing slightly above 40%, were in Africa. Of the current 15 operations, 10 of them are in Africa. Out of the 10, 5 have either remained permanent peacekeeping operations or recurrent ones. This underscores the critical importance of sustained engagement of the UN Security Council with the African Union to improve their partnership for effective peacekeeping operations in the region. The situation has led African regional and sub-regional groups to undertake steps to enhance peacekeeping efforts on the continent. The AU is moving stridently towards establishing an African standby force. Similarly, ECOWAS is developing its sub-regional standby force. Other African sub-regional organizations traditionally focused on development and economic goals are beginning to pay more attention to peace and security issues. The concept note provided for this debate identifies the context of the challenge in the peacekeeping efforts of the AU and the constraints affecting the AU-UN peacekeeping partnership. These include logistical, operational, and financial issues. The strains indicate that significant efforts still need to be made to enhance the peacekeeping capabilities of the AU for a more effective peacekeeping partnership with the UN. Two reports containing recommendations for improving the partnership between the two organizations are worth noting. These are the Prodi report of the African Union United Nations Panel on Modalities for Support to African Peacekeeping Operations, and the report of the chairperson of the AU Commission on the AU-UN partnership, the need for greater coherence. These reports address in a comprehensive manner the measures required for an effective partnership between the UN and the AU in peacekeeping. A major challenge limiting the peacekeeping capabilities of the regional organizations is financial resources. The Security Council in Resolution 1809 recognize this and call for enhanced predictability, sustainability, and flexibility of financing for regional organizations when they undertake peacekeeping under a United Nations mandate. In its effort to meet its financial challenges in the context of peacekeeping missions, the AU has sought authorization for the use of UN-assessed contribution for AU peace operations. This is in consonance with the Prodi report, which also recommends the establishment of a multi-donor trust fund for the purposes of supporting African Union peacekeeping capacity. Effecting these recommendations, we believe, would avail the AU of predictable funding to meet its peacekeeping efforts. The recommendations of the high-level panel chaired by Nigeria's former President Obasanjo on alternative sources of financing for the AU are also relevant in this regard. They should, therefore, be implemented in order to afford the AU greater access to financial resources for the funding of its peacekeeping operations. It is worth noting that the AU has recently undertaken a comprehensive reform effort resulting in improved financial management. Mr. President, in terms of operational challenges, we believe that a great deal more could be done in the areas of UN-AU capacity building programs, joint assessment missions, and planning exercises to enhance the performance of regional peacekeeping missions. The joint adoption of measures to meet evolving peace and security challenges is also relevant in the context of contemporary peacekeeping. Another critical operational challenge is logistics. Logistical deficiencies represent a well-documented and recurring problem in AU peacekeeping missions. This has compelled the AU to rely almost exclusively on assistance from outside the continent for logistics for its peacekeeping missions. A long-term solution would be for the AU to establish its own logistics base. We take positive note of the fact that the Department of Field Services is exploring the possibility of giving the AU access to UN logistics facilities and to a surge capacity for critical mission startup phase, as recommended by the Prodi report. Nevertheless, we believe that some form of bridging mechanism would be required until the logistics base of the AU becomes operational. Mr. President, in terms of the political elements in peacekeeping, we share the view that due to the proximity factor and the first-hand contact during the outbreak of conflict, regional organizations remain the most relevant in the initial efforts to maintain peace. In the case of West Africa, for example, ECOWAS often has taken the lead in peace efforts when conflicts erupt. ECAS has played a very strong leadership role in conflict resolution in the Central African subregion. IGAD has been instrumental in the search for peace in South Sudan. The African Union has also taken the lead in various conflict situations in Africa, including Darfur, Somalia, Mali, and CAR. It is evident that regional and sub-regional organizations tend to demonstrate a greater political will to deal with conflicts, especially in their early stages. This could be attributed to the greater sense of urgency that members of regional organizations share for containing and resolving conflicts, particularly when there is a risk of mass atrocities or regional instability. In terms of collaboration and coordination, Nigeria fully supports the current level of deepened interaction between the Security Council and the AU Peace and Security Council through the annual joint consultations between Addis and New York. There is considerable merit in the close collaboration between the AU Commission and the UN Secretariat, as well as the institutional mechanisms put in place, such as the Joint Task Force and the Desk to Desk. These mechanisms help to bring together the senior leadership and the focal points in both organizations to discuss issues of mutual interest. More attention should also be paid to information management in order to improve synergy in the implementation of mandates. Mr. President, As the AU-UN peacekeeping partnership continues to evolve, there is a need for the intensification of the current collaboration between the two institutions in order to consolidate the gains that have already been achieved. Ultimately, constructive interaction among members of the UN Security Council and the AU Peace and Security Council on substantive issues in peacekeeping remains relevant to creating a cost-effective and mutually beneficial UN and AU peacekeeping partnership. Indeed, a strategic framework embodying a common vision for such cooperation and a roadmap for its implementation can aptly guide this kind of interaction. I thank you.
I thank the representative of Nigeria for her statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Chile. Have the floor.
Gracias, Presidente. Felicitamos a la presidencia de Ruanda por haber convocado a este debate abierto y agradecemos la nota conceptual preparada. Agradecemos asimismo las presentaciones efectuadas por el secretario general y por los representantes de la Unión Africana y de la Unión Europea. Señor presidente, como lo hemos señalado en anteriores ocasiones, para mi país la acción colectiva resulta imperativa para hacer frente a las amenazas tradicionales y emergentes a la paz y a la seguridad internacionales. Y en ella, el involucramiento de las organizaciones regionales y subregionales nos parece de gran relevancia. Ese es el sentido con que mi país interpreta el capítulo octavo de la Carta de las Naciones Unidas con miras a promover un multilateralismo eficiente. La resolución que hoy adoptamos es un reflejo del reconocimiento de este aporte y de la necesidad de fortalecer la capacidad de respuestas colectivas, renovando el compromiso de este Consejo con el mencionado capítulo octavo. La resolución adoptada da cuenta del creciente papel de las organizaciones regionales y subregionales en los últimos años como actor relevante en el sistema internacional, especialmente en lo que respecta a su contribución al mantenimiento de la paz y la seguridad internacionales. Al favorecer la participación de las organizaciones regionales y subregionales, estamos promoviendo a la vez la colaboración y cooperación en los esfuerzos de consolidación de la paz, la otra cara de la mantención de la paz. En este sentido, la cooperación entre Naciones Unidas y estas organizaciones favorece el buen gobierno, la democracia, el respeto de los derechos humanos y fomentar la justicia, la reconciliación y el desarrollo. Descentralizar y desconcentrar los esfuerzos de la comunidad internacional, permitiendo que parte de las facultades de los mandatos de las operaciones de mantenimiento de paz puedan ser delegadas en las organizaciones regionales y subregionales, tiene el potencial de fomentar la participación regional, pero más importante, de generar consensos y profundizar la confianza en el tratamiento de los asuntos internacionales. En este sentido, y reconociendo la importancia de los temas africanos en la agenda de trabajo de este Consejo, saludamos los esfuerzos y el trabajo realizado por y con la Unión Africana. Naciones Unidas y este Consejo en particular debe seguir trabajando en la profundización de una relación estratégica con la Unión Africana, en particular con su Consejo de Paz y Seguridad, así como con otras organizaciones subregionales. Juntos a esos esfuerzos, reconocemos aquellos realizados por nuestra región y por otras en el mantenimiento de la paz y seguridad internacional. En particular, destacamos el compromiso de los países de América Latina y el Caribe con la Misión de Estabilización de Naciones Unidas en Haití, MINUSTAH, única operación de mantenimiento de la paz en nuestro continente. A través de la contribución de tropas y contingente policial, los países de la región hemos apoyado a Haití en su camino para lograr la estabilización, la paz sostenible y el desarrollo. A los esfuerzos bilaterales se suman aquellos de la Organización de los Estados Americanos, la Unión de Naciones Suramericanas y de la CARICOM, que, bajo el principio de apropiación nacional, han contribuido al fortalecimiento institucional del Estado haitiano. Señor presidente, mi delegación quisiera destacar el rol preventivo de las organizaciones regionales y subregionales en la identificación y frente al escalamiento de conflictos locales, evitando que ellos deban ser tratados por este Consejo. Para ello, la creación y el establecimiento de mecanismos de alerta temprana frente a desarrollos regionales que tengan el potencial de afectar la paz y la seguridad internacionales es vital. Su proximidad geográfica, así como un mejor conocimiento de la realidad nacional, regional y las causas de conflictos armados, constituye una ventaja comparativa que este Consejo y Naciones Unidas deba reconocer y emplear. Ello permitirá asegurar la debida complementariedad y un mejor uso de los recursos y de las capacidades existentes. En lo que dice relación con la generación de fuerzas para operaciones del mantenimiento de la paz, las organizaciones regionales y subregionales deben asegurarse que su personal cuente con la formación y las capacidades necesarias conforme los estándares fijados por Naciones Unidas. La formación y capacidades militares deben ir de la mano con la debida formación y entrenamiento en materia de derechos humanos y de derecho internacional humanitario, protección de civiles y en particular mujeres y niños, prevención de la violencia sexual y de género, Estado de Derecho y reconstrucción post-conflicto, entre otros. En este contexto, conforme lo establecido en la resolución 1325, formulamos un llamado a las organizaciones regionales y subregionales a prestar especial atención para asegurar la plena integración de la mujer y de la perspectiva de género en todas las actividades relacionadas con la paz y la seguridad que éstas emprendan, desarrollando las capacidades y competencias necesarias para su debida participación. Reconocemos la asesoría y apoyo de Naciones Unidas otorga para el desarrollo de estas capacidades y entrenamiento, con especial énfasis en las buenas prácticas y lecciones aprendidas. Sin embargo, ello no debiera agotarse allí. Las organizaciones regionales o subregionales debieran profundizar la cooperación con sus pares y, apelando a la cooperación sur-sur, utilizar los mecanismos hoy disponibles. Existen instituciones en los países del sur que cuentan con capacidad de formación reconocida por Naciones Unidas. Mi país, por ejemplo, dispone desde el año 2002 del Centro Conjunto para Operaciones de Paz de Chile, CECOPAC, responsable de preparar y entrenar al personal de las Fuerzas Armadas, Policial y Civil en el proceso de planificación, ejecución y evaluación de las operaciones de paz. Por esta vía, se potencian las capacidades y conocimientos de los ámbitos civil, militar y policial en forma integrada. En la actualidad, CECOPAC cuenta con intercambio de instructores provenientes de la región y Europa, capacitando contingente nacional y extranjero. En este mismo sentido, destacamos el establecimiento en el año 2006 de la Fuerza de Paz Conjunta Combinada Argentino-Chilena Cruz del Sur, puesta por ambos gobiernos a consideración de Naciones Unidas para ser empleada en operaciones de mantenimiento de la paz a partir del año 2012. Asimismo, el año 2013, mi país firmó con la Unión Europea el Acuerdo Marco de Gestión de Crisis, que proporciona una base jurídica para la participación de Chile en las operaciones civiles y militares de gestión de crisis lideradas por la Unión Europea. Actualmente, fuerzas chilenas se encuentran desplegadas en Bosnia y Herzegovina bajo ese marco. Señor Presidente, este Consejo se ha pronunciado reconociendo que las organizaciones regionales y subregionales están en buenas condiciones de comprender las causas de los conflictos armados, dado su conocimiento de la región, lo cual puede ayudar en los esfuerzos que realizan para influir en la prevención o solución de estos conflictos. Por ello, insistimos en el llamado a profundizar estas asociaciones y aprovechar las ventajas comparativas que ellas nos ofrecen, con miras a que la acción colectiva que emprendamos sea el reflejo de un multilateralismo eficiente, en el espíritu del capítulo octavo y los principios que inspiran a nuestra organización. Muchas gracias, presidente.
Representative of Chile for his statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Jordan. Have the floor, sir.
شكرا سيد الرئيس. واسمحوا لي في البداية بأن أتقدم بالشكر الخالص والتقدير البالغ على دعوتكم لعقد جلسة النقاش المفتوحة حول عمليات حفظ السلام الأمم المتحدة والشركاء الإقليميين وتطورها، وعلى إدارة أعمال المجلس بكل حكمة واقتدار. ونعرب كذلك عن تقديرنا للأمين العام للأمم المتحدة السيد بان كي مون ونائب الأمين العام لمفوضية العلاقات الخارجية في الاتحاد الأوروبي وسعادة المراقب الدائم لبعثة الاتحاد الإفريقي لدى الأمم المتحدة على مشاركتهم في هذه الجلسة وعلى إحاطتهم الشاملة بشأن التطور الجاري في أنشطة الأمم المتحدة لحفظ السلام. السيد الرئيس، إن الأردن كغيره من الدول المنضوية تحت لواء الأمم المتحدة يطلع بمهمة حفظ الأمن والسلام الدوليين في أرجاء كثيرة من مناطق النزاع، حيث يأتي ذلك لرغبة الأردن في جعل قواته عنصراً في جهود إحلال الأمن والاستقرار في تلك المناطق وبتحقيق الهدف الأساسي للأمم المتحدة والمتعلق بحفظ الأمن والسلم الدوليين. وإننا نرى كإحدى الدول الرئيسية المساهمة في تحقيق رسالة الأمم المتحدة الرفيعة من خلال مساهمتنا ب 2729 فرداً من حفظة السلام بأن هنالك مسؤولية دولية مشتركة في دعم عمليات حفظ السلام التابعة للأمم المتحدة. السيد الرئيس، لقد واصلت الأمم المتحدة تنسيق الجهود اللازمة في نزع فتيل الأزمات الدولية وحشد الدعم اللازم لحل النزاعات طويلة الأمد، وما لا شك فيه فإن الخبرات الميدانية التي اكتسبتها الأمم المتحدة على مدى نصف قرن تعد أداة لا غنى عنها، فقد باتت عمليات حفظ السلام من أكثر الأدوات المتاحة ذات الفعالية لمساعدة الدول التي يمزقها الصراع على خلق ظروف مواتية لتحقيق السلام المستدام. ومع ذلك فإننا نود التأكيد على أهمية تركيز الجهود على معالجة جذور النزاعات مع مراعاة العمليات السياسية والسلمية في الدول المضيفة، بحيث لا تصبح عمليات حفظ السلام بديلاً عن إيجاد حل لتلك النزاعات. لقد أثبتت عمليات حفظ السلام التي تفتقر إلى الموارد والحجم وقواعد المشاركة الكافية قصورها عن احتواء الفصائل المسلحة التي تظهر خلال الفترة التي تلي الحروب الأهلية، كما أنها تعرض أفراد حفظ السلام للهجمات في بعض الحالات. ووفقاً لذلك فإن قوات حفظ السلام تتعرض لدى اطلاعها بمهامها في كثير من الأحيان إلى مخاطر قد تؤدي إلى إفشال المهام المسندة إليها، وهو ما يتوجب على الأمم المتحدة النظر في سبيل تحسين وتقوية الحماية القانونية لإفراد قوات حفظ السلام بما يكفل حسن أداء مهامهم، بما في ذلك في ظل الشراكات مع المنظمات الإقليمية. ومن الأهمية أيضاً البدء بحوار بناء بخصوص الجوانب القانونية المتصلة بمهام حفظ السلام التي يتم إدراج جزء منها وفق أحكام الفصل السادس من الميثاق وجزء آخر وفق أحكام الفصل السابع أو بشكل مختلط مع الفصل الثامن في إطار الشراكات الإقليمية. وهذا يستدعي مزيدا من المناقشات وإعادة تفعيل لجنة C34 وتوثيق الحوار بين هذه اللجنة واللجنة الخامسة واللجنة السادسة ومجلس الأمن ومع المنظمات الإقليمية والدولية الأخرى. سيد الرئيس، لقد شهدت أنشطة حفظ السلام اتساعاً، وهما ما يرتب صعوبة في التنسيق مع مختلف الأطراف والجهات المعنية وغموضاً في الولاية لدى البعثات، مما فاقم من التحديات العملية لتلك الأنشطة. وكذلك فقد دأبت الأمم المتحدة على إنشاء هياكل تساعد على التكيف السريع وتمكن من بذل المزيد من الجهود بموارد محدودة. ولكن الأردن يود الإعراب هنا عن قلقه حول مفهوم التعاون وشواغله حول مفهوم التعاون بين البعثات ونقل قوات حفظ السلام من بعثة إلى أخرى، إذ أن الاستخدام لفترات زمنية ليست بالقصيرة يلقي بتداعيات سلبية على إداء البعثات ويخلق حالة من عدم التوازن. السيد الرئيس، إن خبرات الدول المساهمة بقوات حفظ السلام تعد عاملاً مهماً في تحسين وتطوير وتفعيل عمليات حفظ السلام، فهذه الخبرات تؤهل الدول لانخراطها في عملية التخطيط لجميع مراحل عمليات حفظ السلام. وعليه فإن الأردن يدعم تكثيف الحوار والمشاورات بين المجلس، مجلس الأمن والسكرتارية والدول المساهمة بقوات حفظ السلام، ونشدد على أهمية الاستفادة من خبرات وتجارب البلدان التي مرت بحالة الصراع وما بعد الصراع عبر توثيق التعاون بين دول الجنوب ومن خلال التعاون الثلاثي. كذلك لا يفوتنا عند تناول المسائل المتعلقة بالسلم والأمن الدوليين أن ننوه بإسهامات الترتيبات التعاونية بين الأمم المتحدة والمنظمات الأقليمية والدولية المعنية بمسائل إقرار عمليات حفظ السلام المشتركة وبما يتفق مع روح ومضمون الفصل الثامن من ميثاق الأمم المتحدة في جهود تحسين الأمن الجماعي، خاصة وأن الأمم المتحدة وحدها لا تعد قادرة على الاطلاع بكافة المهام، وذلك لأسباب عدة منها زيادة في كم ونوع الصراعات إضافة إلى الأعباء المالية. وعليه تأتي أهمية التنسيق مع المنظمات الإقليمية لما يتوفر لديها من إمكانيات وخبرات سياسية وعسكرية. ونؤكد بهذا الصدد على أهمية التناغم في جميع الجوانب بين الأمم المتحدة والمنظمات الإقليمية ضمن مهامها المشتركة، خاصة فيما يتعلق بالإفصاح عن المعلومات لأي طرف كان. ونشدد كذلك على أهمية تطوير الشراكات الفاعلة بين الأمم المتحدة والمنظمات الإقليمية، بخاصة في مجال تعزيز نظم الإنذار المبكر ما يساهم في كشف بؤر النزاع قبل اندلاعها من أجل سرعة التحرك. وننوه بمحورية دور الأمم المتحدة وكافة أجهزتها، إذ أن دور المنظمات الإقليمية وهو دور مهم لا ينبغي أن يحل محل دور الأمم المتحدة، وإنما يعد مكملا ومقويا لها. وهنا لا بد من تعزيز مجالات التنسيق بين إدارة عمليات حفظ السلام في الأمم المتحدة وشركائها لتبادل الخبرات وضمان عدم ازدواجية الجهود. وختاما سيد الرئيس، فإننا ندعو المجتمع الدولي إلى دعم عمليات الحفظ السلام وتعزيز جاهزية الأمم المتحدة لمواجهة المعوقات التي تواجه سلامة وأمن العاملين في بعثات حفظ السلام عبر توفير الدعم السياسي وإيجاد استراتيجية سليمة لبناء السلام. إن وفدي مؤمن بالشراكة الحقيقية بين أصحاب المصلحة بهدف تعزيز حفظ السلام، وسيستمر في حشد الدعم اللازم لتحقيق هذا المسعى. وشكرا سيد الرئيس.
The representative of Jordan for his statement. I give now the floor to the representative of France.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Je remercie moi aussi le secrétaire général de son intervention, ainsi que vous, Monsieur le Président, pour avoir pris l'initiative d'organiser ce débat aujourd'hui entre le Conseil de sécurité, les responsables du maintien de la paix du secrétariat et les organisations régionales, ainsi que les principaux contributeurs de troupes qui s'exprimeront tout à l'heure et qui sont eux aussi des acteurs essentiels du maintien de la paix. Les opérations de maintien de la paix sont un outil irremplaçable dont disposent les Nations Unies pour agir en faveur du maintien de la paix et de la sécurité internationale. Conformément au chapitre 8 de la Charte, les organisations régionales jouent un rôle croissant dans le maintien de la paix que nous devons encourager. Nous devons donc poursuivre nos efforts pour renforcer la coopération entre les Nations Unies, qu'il s'agisse du Conseil de sécurité ou du secrétariat, avec les organisations régionales. Alors, la question de la coopération entre les Nations Unies et les organisations régionales appelle pour la France quatre observations. Tout d'abord, nous devons partir d'un constat très simple. Dans l'essentiel des crises traitées par le Conseil de sécurité, l'action que nous conduisons se fait d'ores et déjà très largement en partenariat avec les organisations régionales. C'est devenu un réflexe naturel. Le cas emblématique est naturellement celui des organisations africaines, et tout particulièrement l'Union africaine. Avec près de 70% de l'activité du Conseil, l'Afrique tient en effet une place particulière dans l'action de cette organisation. Dans ce contexte, la coopération avec l'Union africaine est devenue un mode de fonctionnement quotidien. Ce partenariat s'est approfondi ces dernières années pour couvrir plusieurs champs d'action. Dans le domaine politique, plusieurs modalités de partenariat se sont développées, comme le soutien du Conseil de sécurité à une médiation régionale, qu'il s'agisse du panel de haut niveau de l'Union africaine entre le Soudan et le Soudan du Sud, ou de la médiation de l'IGAD au Soudan du Sud. On pourrait encore citer comme modalité de partenariat la coopération conjointe, à l'instar de celle conduite par la CEEAC avec le soutien de l'ONU et de l'Union africaine en République centrafricaine, et qui, il y a quelques jours, a permis d'aboutir à un accord de cessation des hostilités. Cette variété dans le partenariat ONU-Union africaine se retrouve également dans le domaine des opérations. On pourrait citer le soutien logistique par l'ONU à la MISOM en Somalie, dans le contexte de lutte antiterroriste qui dépasse le champ du maintien de la paix classique de l'ONU. On pourrait également mentionner l'opération hybride entre l'ONU et l'Union africaine au Darfour, ou également le passage de relais de l'Union africaine à l'ONU au Mali, puis en République centrafricaine. Alors, cette coopération multiforme doit être encouragée. L'article 52 de la Charte dispose en effet que le Conseil de sécurité encourage le développement du règlement pacifique des différends d'ordre local par le moyen de ses accords ou de ses organismes régionaux. De manière générale, les organisations régionales présentent des atouts pour résoudre des crises, qu'il s'agisse de la connaissance du terrain, des leviers de pression ou de l'intérêt direct à la stabilisation de pays proches. Il y a donc une complémentarité naturelle entre les Nations Unies, qui incarne la dimension universelle du maintien de la paix, et les organisations régionales. Cette coopération permet en outre de favoriser l'appropriation régionale, en l'occurrence par les Africains, de leur propre sécurité. Le soutien apporté par les Nations Unies permet en effet de développer des capacités qui renforcent les moyens d'action des organisations régionales. À titre d'exemple, le contingent sénégalais qui prendra en charge la nouvelle force de réaction rapide de l'ONUSI et de la MINUL développera des capacités qui pourront ensuite servir aux efforts de maintien de la paix de la CEDEAO. La France et l'Union européenne soutiennent pleinement la montée en puissance des organisations régionales, en particulier africaines. Sur le plan militaire, la France et l'Union européenne sont devenus des partenaires militaires de l'Union africaine. Au Mali tout d'abord, puis maintenant en République centrafricaine, les soldats français et européens ont agi en soutien des soldats de l'Union africaine pour assurer la protection des civils dans le cadre du mandat qui est confié par les résolutions du Conseil de sécurité. En République centrafricaine, c'est incontestablement ce partenariat tripartite qui a permis d'intervenir en urgence avant que des crimes de masse ne soient commis. Et je tiens à cette occasion à saluer le courage des soldats de l'Union africaine, de l'Union européenne et de la France qui ont agi de concert pour protéger les populations menacées. Sur le plan financier, l'Union européenne est le premier contributeur des opérations de l'Union africaine et finance 90% du budget programme de l'organisation. Instrument unique de coopération entre organisations régionales, la Facilité africaine de paix de l'Union européenne est un outil exceptionnel de coopération que permet l'Europe, qui permet à l'Europe de soutenir l'Union africaine lorsque celle-ci déploie des opérations pour préserver la paix sur le continent. Les exemples de la MISOM ou de la MISCA ont démontré le caractère décisif de ce soutien. Si cet instrument devait être préservé, Il convient également, pardon, si cet instrument doit être préservé, il convient également que les organisations africaines puissent progressivement prendre en charge une part croissante de la charge financière de leurs actions et aussi que d'autres partenaires de l'Afrique contribuent également au financement des opérations africaines de paix. Enfin, sur le plan diplomatique, la France veille à se placer dans le cadre d'un partenariat avec les organisations africaines. C'est dans cet esprit d'étroit partenariat que le président de la République avait organisé les 6 et 7 décembre à Paris un sommet Afrique-France sur la question de la paix et de la sécurité en Afrique. Son objet était notamment de définir les moyens de soutenir l'Union africaine pour faire face aux crises, que ce soit à travers la force africaine en attente ou la capacité africaine de réaction immédiate aux crises. Alors, l'adoption de la présente résolution, présentée par vous, par le Rwanda, a pour mérite de souligner politiquement l'importance du lien entre les Nations Unies et les organisations régionales, et en particulier l'Union africaine. Nous attendons donc avec intérêt maintenant les résultats du rapport que soumettra le secrétaire général, en étroite consultation avec l'Union africaine et l'Union européenne, sur les leçons de la coopération intervenue au Mali et en République centrafricaine, et les recommandations qui pourront être formulées pour améliorer la coopération entre les Nations Unies et l'Union africaine. Les travaux qui alimenteront parallèlement la revue du maintien de la paix annoncée le mois dernier par le secrétaire général permettront d'améliorer notre action au service du maintien de la paix et de la sécurité, notamment en Afrique. Je vous remercie.
Representative of France for his statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Korea.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President, for the correction. I like to thank you for organizing today's debate and thank the Secretary General for his insightful briefing. We also thank the briefers for their presentations, which added regional perspective to today's discussion. When the peace and security of a country is disrupted, it affects not only the people in the country in question, but also the neighboring countries, thus inevitably creating regional implications. Under the circumstances, regional and sub-regional entities are positioned to play a pivotal role, utilizing their deep understanding about and potential influence to the parties in conflicts. Countries in the region are often instrumental in preparing or executing peacekeeping activities of the United Nations. We have witnessed such examples in Somalia, Mali, DR Congo, the Central African Republic, and South Sudan. In this regard, I would like to underline a couple of points on ways to enhance regional partnership in the UN's peacekeeping efforts. First, swift response by regional players is critical for the early stabilization of conflicts. The coordinated response by the UN, the ECOWAS, and the AU to the situation in the Central African Republic could be a useful case study for an effective sequencing of peacekeeping activities. The MICOPACT troops of ECOWAS were transitioned into the AU-led MISCA, which is now in the transition process to a UN peacekeeping mission, MINUSCA. Bilateral partners and donors have also played key roles in terms of logistics and financing. Second, inter-regional partnership in peacekeeping activities between the AU and the EU draws our attention as it facilitates more swift and flexible response to meet the situation in the field. This is an evolved form of applying Chapter 8 of the Charter, bridging a gap in the transition process towards a full-fledged UN peacekeeping mission under Chapter 7. In this regard, we welcome the ongoing efforts between the regional organizations to consolidate partnership. We also hope that the Secretary General takes this aspect into account when he reviews ways to ensure progress in the partnership between the UN and regional organizations pursuant to the resolution the Council adopted this morning. Mr. President, we need to note that international intervention does not automatically resolve conflicts. Indeed, as we are witnessing in South Sudan, even full-fledged UN peacekeeping operations and support from donors could not prevent a relapse into conflict. What we need are well-prepared strategies and enhanced partnership. Regional organizations and the UN need to attribute more of their partnership to efforts for early warning and prevention. Preventive strategies are less costly and more effective than peacekeeping operations. Also, the comparative advantage of the region of concern and the UN should also be fully utilized in mediation and reconciliation efforts. Mr. President, the majority of peacekeeping missions currently in operation are engaged in intrastate conflicts in which the primary responsibility lies with the government concerned. Therefore, the combined efforts of the UN and the regional entities should focus on enhancing national ownership and leadership. Disarmament, demobilization, reintegration, and security sector reform are all very important elements in this regard. We hope that this Council builds on today's discussion and continues to explore ways to strengthen the UN's partnership with regional and sub-regional organizations. Thank you.
Representative of the Republic of Korea for his statement. I give now the floor to the representative of Argentina, Marita.
Buenos días, tardes, señor presidente. Muchas gracias. Realmente agradecer la convocatoria a esta sesión sobre un tema al que la Argentina atribuye especial importancia, no solo como país contribuyente de tropas, sino también por reconocer el valor de la participación de las organizaciones regionales en el mantenimiento de la paz y la seguridad internacionales. Puede parecer paradójica nuestra forma de trabajo y nuestras exigencias y responsabilidades. Anoche nos congregábamos por la emergencia, por una situación urgente, como es la dramática situación en Gaza, y por unanimidad adoptábamos un PRT que usted hizo público, señor presidente, en donde este Consejo reclamaba la inmediata e incondicional cese del fuego humanitario y avanzar hacia la iniciativa de paz duradera, expresada en distintas resoluciones de nuestra organización, por países de la región como Egipto, distintos líderes de distintos países, grupos de países y esta organización. Y ahora estamos en una reflexión de mediano y largo plazo. Y es así el desafío ético y el desafío estratégico de este Consejo. Tal vez si estos debates los hacemos con este involucramiento cada vez más participativo de la membresía entera de esta organización, con menos dogmatismos y más ideas innovadoras, sin duda, tal vez contribuya a que usted, presidente, o quien lo sea en su momento, tenga que convocar a menos reuniones de emergencia o por urgencias. Sobre todo por esta especial mirada que las organizaciones regionales, la Unión Africana, la Unión Europea, pero también nuestras organizaciones de América Latina y el Caribe tienen sobre este necesario capítulo destinado a la prevención de los conflictos y no a la provocación de conflictos, a la cooperación y no a la competencia en la conflictividad. Entonces creo que es muy oportuno su convocatoria y que nutre el instrumento que hoy se ha adoptado en el Consejo de Seguridad, una teoría, una mirada que se va haciendo sobre las misiones de paz y en este momento, bueno, la delegación de Pakistán, encabezada por su excelencia el ministro, como también su destacado representante permanente, al ejercer la presidencia del Consejo de Seguridad, puso este tema en una perspectiva prospectiva. Nos hizo mirar hacia adelante valorando lo bueno que se había venido logrando durante el pasado y desde allí tener una resolución de este Consejo que sigue enriqueciendo nuestros debates, nuestras decisiones, como la que hoy adoptáramos y que sin duda llegarán momentos de consolidación como el que logró la distinguida delegación de Pakistán al presidir el Consejo de Seguridad el año pasado. Perdón que introduzca de esta manera, no estaba en el texto, pero es que no por ser la última miembro en hablar, sino porque me he enriquecido, he aprendido una vez más de las reflexiones de cada uno de ustedes en las coincidencias y en las diferencias. Sin duda, los hemos afirmado todos, voy a enfatizar las coincidencias, en que la participación de las organizaciones y acuerdos regionales y subregionales en el mantenimiento de la paz no es una cuestión de preferencia, de ocurrencia, sino una necesidad estratégica en un mundo cada vez más interdependiente, interconectado, un escenario desafiante y complejo donde lo local, nuestras realidades más próximas, se mundializan y lo global impacta en nuestras comunidades, en lo local, en nuestros hogares, en nuestras decisiones políticas, en nuestros modos de mirar el mundo. Las dinámicas, sin duda, de este escenario no solo han permitido un mundo más plural, que reconoce la diversidad, que experimenta una formidable extensión de la cooperación en distintos ámbitos, desde lo económico hasta lo social. África y América Latina y el Caribe en la cooperación sur-sur somos un ejemplo de ello, sin desconocer por ello la cooperación triangular o la norte-sur. Pero al mismo tiempo nos asomamos y enfrentamos a nuevas formas de conflictividad, a la transnacionalización e internacionalización de los riesgos, las violencias, las atrocidades. Por ello, sería al menos torpe, cuando no irresponsable, desconocer o minimizar el hecho de que la Carta de las Naciones Unidas promueve que el Consejo de Seguridad utilice los acuerdos regionales en el cumplimiento de su responsabilidad primaria de mantener la paz y la seguridad internacionales. Es decir, no solo este pasado hecho presente en la resolución que se adoptara el año pasado, sino este presente hecho futuro en la que hoy estamos tratando, este futuro de las misiones de paz está inexorablemente ligado al proceso de regionalización de las operaciones de mantenimiento de la paz. Señor Presidente, pero hay que enfatizar en verbos que distintos colegas han expresado. La contribución de las organizaciones regionales coopera, complementa, no reemplaza la labor de las Naciones Unidas y de este Consejo de Seguridad al incorporar estas organizaciones el conocimiento del contexto, incluyendo una comprensión más acertada y profunda de las causas del conflicto, un interés político vital en que esa misión llegue a buen puerto, nada menos que el interés de preservar la vida, defenderse del miedo a perderla. La proximidad geográfica, la experiencia de formas de vida y expresiones culturales análogas, afines, la sensación de confianza que habitualmente pueden generar los actores locales. Sin duda son ventajas comparativas que hemos encontrado como evidencia empírica de gran valor para y en la implementación de los acuerdos de paz, el monitoreo de cese de hostilidades, para abrir espacios para las negociaciones y acuerdos políticos y sociales, para ayudar en la transición hacia la consolidación del Estado de Derecho a través de gobiernos estables y legítimos, basados en principios democráticos, para apoyar la acción humanitaria, para contribuir en los planes de desarme, desmovilización y reintegración de excombatientes, para promover la protección, la garantía y el pleno ejercicio de los derechos humanos, especialmente de las mujeres y de los niños, que sus derechos sean respetados, lo decía la colega de Luxemburgo, de los grupos en condiciones de vulnerabilidad, discriminados, marginados o excluidos, que si así lo estaban en situaciones de paz, más lo están cuando existe un conflicto. Señor presidente, las Naciones Unidas aportan, deben aportar su composición universal y legitimidad, sumar a esta composición universal su mayor experiencia y capacidad operacional. El monopolio que tiene este Consejo para desplegar, para autorizar el despliegue de organizaciones de mantenimiento de la paz, establecer sus mandatos, las condiciones del despliegue, implica el sometimiento de las operaciones de paz lideradas por organizaciones regionales o híbridas a los mandatos y objetivos de Naciones Unidas, que actúen respetando la soberanía, la integridad territorial, la unidad del país, en conformidad con las disposiciones del derecho internacional humanitario, el derecho de los derechos humanos, el derecho de los refugiados. Asimismo, la obligación de las organizaciones regionales de mantener al Consejo de Seguridad informado de sus actividades favorece sin duda comprender mejor cómo actuar y algo que también es necesario, claro que es necesario, la rendición de cuentas, que no solo es financiera, también una rendición de cuentas de las operaciones de mantenimiento de la paz debe medirse en términos de vidas humanas, protegidas, salvadas, cuidadas. Señor presidente, sé que quedan muchos oradores, que hoy tenemos un día lleno de actividades, pero me parece importante marcar tres principios que para mi país son fundamentales. Una, que en el proceso de externalización, esta asociación entre Naciones Unidas y organizaciones regionales y subregionales, basada en la cooperación no discriminatoria y equilibrada, sin duda, hay que incorporar condiciones como la prestación de asesoramiento técnico y especializado de parte de la ONU en la planificación y despliegue de las organizaciones de mantenimiento de la paz regionales, así como sobre la aplicación de su concepto de operaciones, sobre el establecimiento del cuartel general de la misión, con miras a fortalecer sus estructuras administrativas y de mando y control, mejorar la infraestructura de comunicación y tecnología de la información, e impartir la capacitación en todas las áreas que son necesarias, también derechos humanos. En segundo lugar, el establecimiento de mecanismos apropiados de coordinación entre las Naciones Unidas y la organización regional. Y tercero, el establecimiento de mecanismos de financiamiento que provean niveles adecuados de previsibilidad, sustentabilidad y dignidad, es decir, no solo niveles adecuados de financiamiento en los equipamientos, sino también en las condiciones en las que desarrollan sus labores nuestros peacekeepers. Señor presidente, lo dijo el colega de Chile, así que no voy a reiterar, pero claro es que nuestra región, región de paz, que no es un regalo de la naturaleza, es una decisión compartida por nuestras sociedades y sostenida por políticas públicas donde la democracia y los derechos humanos llevan a que la paz sea un valor y el conflicto no sea valorado. para resolver problemas, disputas, controversias. Distintas organizaciones, CELAC, UNASUR, muestran el MERCOSUR, muestran que junto a la prevención de conflictos está la cláusula democrática. Señor Presidente, aguardamos el próximo informe bianual del secretario sobre la cooperación entre las Naciones Unidas y las organizaciones regionales y otras organizaciones. Esperaremos las recomendaciones sobre los medios para fortalecer la cooperación entre las Naciones Unidas